This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. Welcome to Place to Be Nation's comprehensive look at the news and happenings throughout today's wrestling universe. Hosts JT Rosero, Steve Willey, and Nate Milton are joined by insiders and guests to take you around the wrestling world on PTBN's Clotheslines and Headlines. Take it away, boys. It's Lariat time.
And extra, extra. We all are fired. I got it like that. Tuck my neck in and
you know good and well that you don't want a problem like that. Welp, America, here we are. JT Rosera here for episode number 11 of PTBN's Clotheslines and Headlines, and I hope you all are preparing to at least get some sleep like we're hopefully going to after we record the show. But it's been a busy, I don't know, 48-ish hours here in the United States, and we got lots to go on in the world of wrestling and in the world of the world. So we're going to touch on a little bit of everything here tonight. But before we can do that, as always, I do need to bring in my co-hosts, Mr. Godfather Nate Milton, the voice of Review America. How are you feeling, sir?
Hey, you talk about 48 hours. I wish we all as a country watched 48 hours last night, because I think Eddie Murphy and Nick Nolte is the one thing that could bring us all back together right now.
Right? 48 years, it felt like, that election. So usually we have Steve Willey with us, Nate. He is rehabbing from knee surgery.
Yes.
Unless, I don't know, he's either faking it like Shawn Michaels and just lost a smile after the election, or it's legitimate and he's healing up and hopefully not getting hooked on pills. But anyway, he was unable to make it tonight. So as is the usual, when one of us is out, we do have a special guest. And I'm making his Clotheslines and Headlines debut, my former partner over on the Kevin Kelly Show, the former producer of Dangerous Alliance. I shouldn't say former. That show probably coming back at some point. Dan McGinn, how are you?
I am great, guys. I am where podcasts go to die, so sorry. I was just hanging out at the Steve Corino studios.
Greystone.
And thankfully, Justin was able to come and rescue me. I've been eating nothing but peanut butter cups and Dr. Pepper, diet Dr. Pepper, mind you. For months now. So thank you for saving me. It's good to be here.
There you go. Just binging on anger. And somewhere Timothy Buckner's went from 6 to midnight when he heard Dan McGinn's voice come on. So that's good. All right. So, of course, we have lots to talk about. It is our final show before Survivor Series, guys, believe it or not. So we will be covering the big event in Toronto. We'll talk about that in a little bit. We'll preview NXT TakeOver as well. We'll briefly touch on Hell in a Cell. A little bit old now, but Dan was actually there in Boston, so we'll get his take being live at the show, kind of how, seeing that women's main event in the Cell went and whatnot, and we'll talk a little bit of other WWE news. Then we're going to have the Cowboy, Mr. Roger Morissette, will be here to talk UFC, because this weekend, UFC 205 making its debut in Madison Square Garden. He'll break down the card, kind of give his thoughts on the importance of that card. And I know it's a supersized one, I believe. It's supposed to run to like 2 a.m. or something crazy. So, although there was one match that was pulled, so I'm not sure if that affects anything. But knowing UFC, they'll just fill with a bunch of crap until they hit the 2 o'clock hour. So, there you go. And then, of course, New Japan had a big pay-per-view last weekend as well. And that was Power Struggle. And we'll have our good friend Pete Schermacher here from the Titans Wrestling to return. He was here about a month ago, and he'll be back to talk some more New Japan. But boys, we thought we'd take a little twist with the headlines, because you know what? This election is not even 24 hours old, at least the finale of it, the climax, if you will, of Donald Trump becoming the president-elect of the United States. And we're not here to talk politics. Don't fast forward, don't turn off, because we're not looking at it in that regard. I feel like we at least got to talk about it a little bit. So we wanted to look at it from the spectacle point of view, kind of aware, what were you thinking, the nonsense of it all. His ties to wrestling. So kind of looking at it from that point of view, we're not going to talk any politics. We're not going to get into policies or who should have won what, who voted for who. We really don't want to get into that. We're just here to kind of talk about, I don't know, the farcical nature of this whole election. Nate, like I mentioned, you actually had a podcast series going on with, I believe, Brian Mann, right? Review America. So why don't you take a stab, first of all, of kind of walking us through your night last night? And did you record a finale podcast? When's that dropping, if you did, and what's going on there?
Well, first of all, I'm glad we're not getting into policy and the deep reaches of politics, because, like you said, that is Brian Mann and myself's gimmick. on Review America. And we do have a finale podcast planned to kind of wrap everything up. I have no idea when we'll actually get down and record this thing, but it will be coming your way. So for those that are policy wonks and want to hear about electoral colleges and all sorts of minutia when it comes to this thing, you can check that out. But in terms of the spectacle and how I watched the thing, I got home from work, I want to say around 7:30. And that's right when the polls were closing here in Virginia. So, you know, you start to get the little trickles in with 1% of the vote in. Here's the projection for the city councilman. And like, I don't really care about that. City councilman's not really affecting my day-to-day life. I'm here for the main event, you know, with our WWE Hall of Famer. And so, you know, I'm getting ready and you know, talking to folks and just kind of observing, because not only was this kind of a TV thing, but I think maybe even more so than 2012, this was a social media election, particularly when you have one of the candidates, you know, hopping on social media. You never know who might slide in your DMs at 3 a.m. So like, I just found it to be very much pro wrestling, you know, and it's whether you're looking at Fox News or MSNBC or CNN. I pretty much kept it on MSNBC because I'm a mark for Rachel Maddow and Steve Kornacki, who couldn't get that damn whiteboard to work last night. And just looking at the way that they kind of changed the tone from, okay, this is what we think is going to happen, to, okay, this is what looks like it's happening, to, oh, damn, that really happened.
It felt like a sports game or yes, I don't know, football, yes, somewhere like you just expected one team to, like a Super Bowl, where maybe like even like that Denver Seattle one, where you know you're kind of expecting it to at least be even for a bit, and then Denver and all of a sudden Seattle's up like 40-0 and you don't know what the hell happened, you know, like that's what it felt like. It was like, what, you know, wait, what?
I was gonna say maybe even more in Dan's wheelhouse, this felt like that Patriots Seattle Super Bowl,
right? Yeah,
where Pete Carroll makes that call at the end of the game and you're like, oh. Everybody just kind of looked at everybody at whatever Super Bowl party they were at, and they're like, did he just call a run a pass play? And like, well, yeah, he did. And I think that's kind of the reaction that you know, a lot of people had last night. Like, whoa, like regardless of what side you were on, it's like, wow, that is one of the most shocking things to happen in American politics.
Well, Nate, it's funny that you mentioned that, because I don't think I was at work for maybe 2 hours today, and I was just sort of scrolling like everybody else, and I found a meme that had Trump's head on Malcolm Butler's body, and Hillary was the receiver for the Seahawks, and of course now the Patriots and Seahawks are playing each other this week, so it definitely was kind of a sporting event. What many people don't know about me, I actually I went into school for broadcasting, but I minored in political science. I've always been a big fan of campaigns and watching the polls and that sort of thing. I never really quite understand it. It's not anything I went in for as a profession or anything, but I always just found it fascinating. And this was unlike anything I'd ever seen before. But I would be like, if I was one of those talking heads, I'd be like one of those guys who would be like, well, and look at this county over in 2012, and Obama carried this by 11 points, and it's only a 3-point, you know, that sort of thing interested me. So I was kind of watching it as if I was a fan, just sort of, whoa, what's going to happen next? And to the sporting event analogy, I kind of looked at it this way. I was like, there's no way this night's going to end with President-elect Trump. There's going to be something that's going to happen. And even the guys on Fox, because I went after it on the other side, because I, you know, I kind of have a, you know, I'm kind of a mark for Karl Rove looking crazy, you know, with his whiteboard. But, what I found fascinating about the whole thing was I was just waiting for the big, you know, monumental comeback by Hillary Clinton. And at one point on Fox, they were like, well, you know, if she took Arizona followed by Minnesota and Michigan and New Hampshire. And I'm like, wait a minute, that's a lot of ifs and buts to get this right comeback. I don't, you know, I mean,
yeah, you just kept waiting for something to happen. Like, you kept waiting, assuming there was going to be just some kind of fix at some point, right? I mean, just kind of like, all right, when, like you're saying, like, when's the shoe going to drop? When's the big upset going to, you know, when's the big news going to come in? When's the scandal going to leak out and Trump gets booed? You know, you kept waiting for the twist and it just never came. And it was just a beatdown. It was like Cena and Brock at SummerSlam 50. You know, it's just like you're waiting for the comeback that never comes.
Like, we'll talk about it later, but I had the same reaction at about 2 o'clock this morning that I had after Hell in a Cell.
Right.
With Charlotte's Sasha Banks. I'm like, that didn't, I don't think that was how it was supposed to play out. Like, right? Like that was an interesting conclusion. I don't know if it was the conclusion that that we were all expecting, and I don't know how to rate this show.
So now, did you guys stay up through, like, Dan, how late did you stay up? Did you make it the whole thing? And then what time were you up for work today?
Well, I started watching it pretty much from the beginning. I stayed up until about 2:15. And the reason why I stayed up that long was I was doing laundry. So there's other things going on. But I looked at the clock at one point and I was like, it's 2:15. And if I went to bed at a normal time, my alarm goes off at 6. And so I'm like, I need to like force myself to go to bed. And you know what? I know I'm going to find out about this on social networks, on my, like, I'll probably get like a pop-up or a text message even saying he won or he lost or whatever. So I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to go to bed and maybe it'll be like kind of a, you know, like an 04 perhaps, something where I'll just find out in the morning and I'll be fine. It'll be cool. And of course I did wake up, but then when I found out that all I had to do was wait an extra half hour, I probably would have after watching this from about 7 o'clock on. And I was trying to, there was a little bit of like prep work for this. I was writing a little bit for the Excellent Adventure column. So there was a little bit of multitasking going on, but by the time around maybe like 8:25 or something like that, I was thinking, oh man, this could be, we could be in for something historic and something crazy. And we've got both, I think.
They need to move Election Day to like a Thursday and just give everyone Friday off. Like, I think that's what they got to do. Or Thursday and Friday off. Just the whole thing. Two holidays. Yeah, I started probably around 7:30 or 8. I locked in. And then, yeah, I went right through to about 12:30 is when I left it on in my recliner. And I just said, I'll allow myself to close my eyes. Like, until then, I was forcing myself to stay open. Just keep my eyes open. So I dozed off around 12:30. I woke up at like 1:30. And I saw that, like, there was nothing saying president-elect or anything like that. So I'm like, oh, my God. So I dozed back off, woke up at 2:30, and went upstairs, and my wife still had it on. She had passed out a while ago, and that's when I saw President Donald Trump. I was like, oh, shit. So, yeah, it was probably right on the same time. 15 minutes after you went to bed, Dan, I kind of woke up and saw it, and I passed back out and was up around, I think, 6:30, quarter of 7 or so. So it was a long day, and they knew it at work. I mean, everyone – you know, we have like this all hands meeting and they're all like, look, I know you guys are all, everyone here is like exhausted because everyone was up late. And I know elections usually, like election night usually goes deep into the night. Was that abnormal? Like, I was having a hard time remembering because I guess maybe the last few haven't really been close. So I didn't, you know, you kind of knew it was over by like 11:30, but I feel like this was really late into the night.
Yeah, this is one of the later ones in recent memory. You know, I'm a night owl by nature, and fortunately I had today off, so I was up for the long haul. You know, much like the pay-per-view, I watched the pre-show, the event, and the post-show with Brian Williams playing a part of Michael Cole.
Oh, boy.
So, I watched everything. But in terms of previous elections, like, of course, 2000 took forever. I want to say Clinton and Dole in 96, we knew that pretty much.
I think we knew that like a week and a half before.
You knew that a week before the election.
That was like it's like when you know the number one draft pick in the NFL draft, like it's announced before, like, oh yeah, Clinton's gonna win. Okay.
I want to say maybe 08 was the latest previous to this one, and even 08, I think that was done by 12:30, 1 o'clock in the morning.
Right.
Yeah, the last election with Obama and Romney, we basically had to wait until the polls closed in California, and Obama basically had enough to clinch it. And there was some padding of the stats a little bit towards the end with Romney to make it look a little bit closer. But you were pretty much looking at the clock. It's like, hey, it's midnight. I could actually still have an evening out of this. You know, we already know who the president is compared to this. Yeah, certainly 2000. The Bush years were very, very, very close. But yeah, this you kind of had a feeling that some of the networks kind of were, there was a little gamesmanship going on. I think, and it's no surprise, you look at Fox is obviously going to try to make it look like, well, look at that, Trump has a pretty sizable lead. We might actually already be talking about President-elect Trump before we even have all the results in. But then if you flip over, I don't know what it looked like on MSNBC, Nate, but I think on CNN, maybe they didn't necessarily call a state perhaps for Trump right away because they wanted to make it look a little bit closer. You know, there's still possibly a chance. Yeah. I think there was a little bit of gamesmanship going on between the networks.
Definitely for CNN. Exactly. I don't have cable, so I was using Sling, and they have CNN on there, and that's pretty much the only like major news network. So I was watching that, and there was definitely multiple states where it was I was seeing on Twitter it was getting called, and they still weren't calling it on CNN. Like, I don't think they called like Florida until like way later than everyone else. So yeah, and they were melting down as it was going on. Like, a lot of Wii's were being dropped and stuff. It's always interesting to see the difference in the coverage. But yeah, it was a bizarre night, guys. WWE Hall of Famer,
yes.
President of the United States. I mean, so does Linda end up in the cabinet, or what's going on?
Honestly, you know, it's funny, and I've seen the joke on Twitter, but it would not surprise me. You know, she's not going to end up in the cabinet, but it wouldn't surprise me if she got, you know, some type of figurehead position, some type of ambassadorship. You know, send her to McMahon's Irish, right? So make her the ambassador to Ireland.
Secretary of Sports Entertainment. So do you think Vince, like, I mean, they're in a tough spot, right? Because they're publicly traded. So, I mean, he's not going to come out and, like, gloat, but, like, do you think they congratulate him? Like, do you think they say, how do you think they handle this on Raw next week? I mean, over the top do they go with the fact that a guy that has strong ties on the on-screen product, hosted two WrestleManias, was in the crowd at least two others,
yep.
You know, did multiple angles, was one of the, as Scott and I talked about on this week's Place to Be podcast, one of the biggest draws in WrestleMania history, popped one of the biggest buy rates and biggest gates, you know, had the big storyline where he bought Raw. So, I mean, tons of interaction with the company. You got to think they're going to at least mention it a bit. I don't know. What do you think, Dan?
Somebody's going to have a hat on at the very least.
Right.
Yeah. Bob Backer. Make America great again. type of hat involvement. I guess it really depends on how obnoxious, or maybe how much the writers were into Trump. I don't know. But you got to think that Vince will try to do something, whether it's, you know, have some sort of, you know, just a lot of veiled references to him as a Hall of Famer who happened to go on to become president. Like, maybe you'll be president someday, like talking to somebody, you know.
Nikolai Volkov, if you're only American born, you
can. You know, but you can't deny the amount of times this guy did, you know, perform for WWF and WWE, and it's really going to be funny watching things like WrestleMania 4 again,
right.
Or even Celebrity Apprentice. Like, when I used to watch Celebrity Apprentice, when like Maria and Mark Henry were on there and just having fun, to myself, this guy could be president someday, and here we are, 2016, and I know a lot of people feel like they woke up out of a nightmare, or maybe they're still in a nightmare, but...
It's mind-blowing. Yeah, it's mind-blowing that this guy actually won. It's like, pausing beyond it, I'm just him having actually won. When he entered a couple years ago, seemed like a publicity stunt. It was crazy that he finally did it, because I feel like he'd been talking about it forever. And then he does it, and... I mean, even he had to wake up this morning and be like, I cannot believe this happened. Like, did he even want to be president? I don't know. You know, like, it wouldn't shock me if he resigned tomorrow.
Like sometimes at some points during the campaign, it's almost felt like he's kind of looking around like, ain't nobody going to stop this, man. Come on, right? Fellas. Hey, Roger, tell him it was just a joke, man. Kellyanne, do something. But
what do I got to do to get, you know, kicked out of here, man?
Like,
you know.
It's like Brewster's Millions, where he's like, you know, don't vote for me, don't vote, you know.
Yeah.
Vote
yeah,
for like, no one or whatever.
Like, this is part of his inheritance. He had to run for president to earn his inheritance.
Right. Another funny meme that I've seen, again, because this is all I do. I just scrolled all day today. Because I was at work, but don't tell anybody. I was scrolling my social networks. If you get through all the different, you know, he's not my president stuff, or the, I can't believe this happened stuff, there is some funny things, too. But I saw one that had Bernie Sanders.
Yes.
That
yes.
looked like... hang in with his briefcase. And I thought that was pretty funny too. Like, it wouldn't have shocked me if that something like that happened during this election as well.
I mean, as far as the WWE thing goes, I gotta think it's such a divisive situation. I think they're best off ignoring it. I mean, maybe just mention it, but
yeah. I think that they'll at least have to mention it though, because he is, you know, in the Hall of Fame, and yeah, you'll get at least an offhand comment from Cole, but I don't think they'll hammer it home.
Yeah, because you get people that are going to thrive. I've already seen a couple of people, you know, saying they're dropping the network or whatever else because, you know, they're basically, you know, Vince supports Trump and they're anti-Trump. So, I mean, there's going to be back if they come out and trumpet it, I think that, no pun intended. I mean, there's definitely going to be, I think, some backlash from a set of fans. Now,
JR, I know that last night one of the big storylines was people having problems and the predictions being wrong. Mm-hmm. But I predict that 99.999% of the people that say they're going to cancel the network because of this will not.
Will more people cancel the network or move to Canada?
Like, if they cancel the network, it's not going to be because of Donald Trump. It'll be because they don't want to pay $9.99 to watch, you know, Baron Corbin.
They've threatened for much more than that. I mean, they threatened over Roman Reigns winning the Rumble. So there's a very different varying degrees here. Yeah, it's again, it's quite the night. So the LA Times, I believe, was the only one that actually nailed this, right? Didn't they pick like the only one? There was two polls, I think, that said Trump was going to win. I think they were the most high-profile one.
Yeah, like even I think it's Nate Silver, who's kind of been on a hot streak the last few years. He only gave Trump a 30% chance, and that was
The highest, more though,
than,
right?
Right. That was more than most pundits. So this is whether you were on Team Trump or whether you're on Team SmackDown, Team Blue, or Team Raw, Team Red. You know, this was certainly surprising either way you look at it.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like, you know, I mean, he was getting ripped and bashed for having Trump that high. Like, he was getting made fun of, and he was the closest to it. But I mean, it seemed like a lot of the polls didn't take into effect that just people weren't going to come vote. I mean, they were just assuming that everyone voted, you know, for Democrat last time in those states, or voted for Bernie or whatever. You know, we're just going to swing and show up, and they just didn't show up. I mean, that is what it is. So anyway, you can hear more about this, of course, like I mentioned earlier, on Nate's Review America series, and I'm sure everywhere else in the world you can hear more about it. I felt like, and so did Nate and Dan, that we at least had to mention it here to open the show. It's the biggest news in the world today, and it does have wrestling ties, so we thought at least it was worth dabbing in a little bit. So any final comments on it?
I'll say two quick points, if I may, brother.
Yeah, of course.
Number one, like you said, man, you know, we wanted to touch on this off the top, but we didn't want to dwell on it. And if there's a lesson to be learned from last night, it's that while the country might be divided, we're much more alike than you may think. And so one of the things that unites us, at least the people that are listening to this, is pro wrestling. So we're going to have a good time this week. But the second thing I want to say to any prospective employers or networks out there, after last night, y'all, I should never, ever, 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 ever have to hear that I'm underqualified for a radio or TV position again. Right. 'Cause apparently qualifications don't matter.
Just listen to Review America. Listen to Review and Impact. Listen to Clotheslines and Headlines. Listen to Nate Milton and that godlike voice. Dan, anything you have on this?
Well, I guess we can take a look at some of our other great reality TV show hosts that are out there, you know, Survivor, you know.
Jeff Probst.
Jeff Probst, yeah, exactly. Maybe the Bellas or John Cena get involved in something.
Cena could have won in a walk last night.
I could actually see John Cena running for office.
Right. Yeah. No. You got to consider now. I mean, yeah. Sure. There's Democrats. There's Republicans. There's Libertarians. There's Green. There's all kinds of different parties. But screw that. It's reality TV hosts. That's the wave of the future.
The Hogan knows best ticket.
You can't see me party.
There you go. There
all
you
right.
go.
Well, we'll all get through this together, gentlemen.
Hogan Knobs 2020.
That's how much he weighs, Knobs. Anyway, like Hootie the Blowfish once sang, gentlemen, we'll hold my hand and we'll all get through this thing together. So why don't we go ahead and take a break? And you know what the song coming out is right now. So we'll go ahead and take a break. We're going to come back. We'll be talking some WWE. We'll put the politics behind us. And thanks for listening. We'll be right back after this break. Listen to...
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Voice of Ring of Honor's Kevin Kelly here. I just want to make sure you're all subscribed to all of our great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. Now, it's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search for and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation Wrestling Feed, Place to Be Nation Pop Feed, Pro Wrestling Only feed, and of course, the Kevin Kelly Show feed, which includes the full archives of my podcast. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And of course, as always, enjoy all the great action of Ring of Honor Wrestling and everything presented to you on PlaceToBeNation.com.
But I'm stronger. You thought that I'd be broke without you, but I'm richer. You thought that I'd be sad without you, I love harder. Thought I wouldn't grow without you, now I'm wiser. Thought that I'd be helpless without you.
All right, Place Nation, we are back. Episode 11. Clotheslines and headlines. And, of course, Dan McGinn, Nate Milton here, along with myself, JT. And turning our eyes to the world of WWE, it is, of course, the Thanksgiving weekish tradition. I don't know, whatever it's called now. Thanksgiving coming so goddamn fast. It's amazing. And of course, so is Survivor Series. This is number 20? 30? 40? I don't know. 30? Is it 30th one? 20th one? Anyone?
30th. I'm done with numbers after last night, man.
30th Survivor Series. 30th Survivor Series.
Ryan Schmock will tell us.
My God, can you believe it's 30 Survivor Series already.
It's crazy.
It's been a long, long road. And, of course, Dan McGinn, well-versed in Survivor Series lore and history. Your big column that you once wrote back on PTBN about your love of Survivor Series 89. So we'll talk about that in a bit. First, we're going to turn back the clock a couple weeks. And we'd like to do that in many aspects, but specifically this one. We'll turn back the clock. And, of course, Hell in a Cell, far in our mirror now. Nate and I will give brief thoughts, but because Dan was here and he was there in Boston, wanted to give him a few moments just to kind of talk about his experience. I think he was up in the Euchre seats. But, Dan, what was it like being at that show? A show that got not the best reviews. A main event that kind of had varying degrees of thought amongst fans. And as well as the title match as well. So, you know, there were some good, there was some bad. But what was your take on the whole night?
It was kind of like what you just said. It was a bit of a mixed bag. I mean, you're always going to bump up things a few points when you're there live. Certainly, you get a chance to see, like, the intros and jazz. But, I don't know, it was kind of an off night for a Boston pay-per-view. There was a couple backstage segments that maybe it's because of my seats, too. Maybe I shouldn't just blame the whole company for this. I should just blame my ticket guy. But anyway, it was just really hard to kind of hear some of the speakers and such. And so, like, I missed an entire promo with Kevin Owens. But again, just a little nitpicky stuff on that front. People were really excited about the cages, all three cage matches. It might not have come across really on the pay-per-view, which I haven't rewatched yet, in fairness. But anytime that cage was brought down, you know, you have that kind of boom boom music that they play, that, you know, big fight feel type stuff. People got excited. I think there was a little bit of a more energy after the Owens and Rollins match because people started to figure out, I mean, if they hadn't already, that the women were going to go on last. So you kind of had that feeling of, wow, we're going to be part of something that's always going to be referenced. Regardless of how the match is going to be, you're always going to have that highlight of Hell in a Cell 2016, the day that the women finished and the first Hell in a Cell match involving female competitors. So in that regards, it made for a kind of a special evening. You kind of were waiting and holding out hope that things were going to be really fun and exciting. You had the good entrances between the two, elevating the women, and I think that's great. I'm not going to ever like say, oh man, I can't believe they burned a pay-per-view with women ending. That's not what I'm about at all. I think we've come a long way in that division. But I got to admit, the ending, while it was crazy with the violence and everything, they really felt they needed to step it up and kind of show the guys that they can hang two in the cage. And it's also very difficult to do that in a G-rated world. When you see that, I'm sorry, maybe I'm being petty here, but when Sasha Banks from Boston loses in Boston, people aren't going to respond well to it. I don't care how good the match is. I don't care how great and over Charlotte is as a heel character. People aren't going to like that. Boston has seen Alberto Del Rio win the largest Royal Rumble in history, and it was like a fart in church when it ended. We saw a main event Survivor Series in 2010 with with the Big Show, who was, you know, basically being punked around by Stephanie McMahon. If you remember that storyline where he's like poor and has to, you know, he's getting made fun of. He's terrible in the sack, you know, that storyline against Randy Orton, where people were yelling boring, boring, and checking their phone as Denver was playing New England on Sunday night. And now we get this where it's like, I've never seen, and you might be able to see it, or maybe they cut the tape fast, but I've never seen people exit a building so fast after a pay-per-view the way this was in Boston. I mean, like, they're empty seats. They're noticeable empty seats as Charlotte's holding up the belt. I mean, it was crazy how quickly people just ran out of there. So, kind of, yeah, like I said, it was a fun night, definitely worth going to, but wow, just really had it, took the air out of their sails towards the end there.
Yeah, Nate, what did you think of the finish of the women's match? I mean, it sounds like it was changed last minute by Vince. It sounds like it was due to petty reasons. Mm-hmm. The fact that Triple H finally convinced him to let it go on last, and then he basically said at the last minute, well, fuck you. I'm gonna screw with you and have Charlotte win. I mean, Charlotte has been the race. She's got the pay-per-view streak and everything else. So it's not like she lost completely out of the blue to, like, Alicia Fox or something. I mean you, at least can, you can say that Charlotte is, like, their main person. That's it. Very stupid. stupid thing.
Yeah. I think we can all agree. We have consensus on this one because I thought the show as a whole was solid. It wasn't anything great, but it wasn't terrible either. It was just kind of there. I liked the main event up until the finish. I thought both women worked hard. And, yeah, I think that the decision to take the belt off of Sasha in Boston just makes no sense. And it's part of the reason why I feel this feud has felt a bit disjointed at times, because we see Sasha winning the belt on Raw before SummerSlam and then losing at SummerSlam. And then she comes back and wins the belt again on Raw, and then loses in her hometown in the first women's pay-per-view main event in WWE history. And so it feels like, yeah, they're giving Charlotte and Sasha this spotlight, but the story is just not connecting. And obviously, you know, the main goal is to get to Bayley and Charlotte. But I think there was a way to both have that great moment in Boston, which is something that pro wrestling needs to do more of, in my opinion. You're like, send the people home happy and have these memorable moments. If you're going to go through the trouble of making this historic, let's leave with a historic moment. And I think Sasha should have won. And then if they wanted, they could come back in Survivor Series for the rubber match or however they want to, you know, phrase it. And then, you know, you can put the belt on Charlotte. But as they did it, you know, I don't think they buried Sasha like some people are saying, but I do think that it hurts her momentum a bit. And it felt, like you said, man, very petty. And I've said for years, man, if Vince McMahon was a president, he would be Petty Roosevelt. So he lived up to that moniker this past show.
I mean, the match made, like, the structure made sense. Charlotte beat the shit out of her. Sasha kept coming back and coming back and coming back. And eventually her body just broke down. So, I mean, the story of the match made sense. It's just the wrong place, wrong time.
Yes.
For what they're trying to do. And if they really want to do Bayley Charlotte, why does it have to be for the title? Why can't Sasha keep the belt, feud with Nia Jax, and then you do Bayley versus Charlotte as a non-title feud, and then you mm-hmm. do Bayley versus heel Sasha. You turn Sasha into the new year and have them fight a Mania. You know, like, they could have done something like that. So, yeah, there was lots of ways around it. I mean, you could argue more people actually saw the Sasha wins, because I don't know what the, you know, pay-per-view viewership versus Raw numbers are these days. I know Raw's down, but I don't know if it's still higher than how many people see the special events. Back in the day, like in the Attitude Era, you could argue that more people saw Raw. So it was actually meant more, even though it seemed counterintuitive. Dan, how about the rest of the card? Owens and Rollins, that seemed to be a little divisive as well. I saw some people throwing out, you know, over 4 stars for that match. So I'm coming in under it. Give me your take on that, Dan, and also Owens' reign, like, overall. Has it felt flat? Has it been disappointing? It seems like everyone was dying for Kevin Owens to get the title, and he's almost been an afterthought. I don't know if that's a result of the brand split or just the booking, but it almost seems like it's not even actually going on.
Right. It's kind of a tale of two Owenses. I think that what you see on television gets a little bit overshadowed with the Jericho stuff, and you're kind of like, oh, he's the champ. You know, I think that that's the test, is if someone who doesn't really watch wrestling is walking by or flipping and they happen to see Owens carrying that red belt, oh, wow, he's the champ? Okay. You know, that's the kind of feeling that you get when you see Kevin Owens. But when you're actually in a live event and you hear that first few beats of his music, the place goes crazy. The place erupts. I mean, it's just a very definitive roar that you hear whenever that music starts playing. Now, whether or not that's sustained throughout the match, you know, you can be the judge of that. But yeah, it is kind of one of those, all this time we were waiting, particularly when he beat Cena in his debut, you were thinking to myself, oh my gosh, here he is. He's arrived. And now he's here, and you're kind of like, all right. Great, you know, and that's how I kind of felt about the cage match. You had the loud roar on the entrance. Of course, everybody was already hyped up about the cage coming down from the rafters and that sort of thing. And then you kind of looked at it like, great, it's another Seth Rollins in a title match, or it's you know, Kevin Owens. You know he's going to win, but you know it's not going to be on the level. You know there's going to be some sort of crazy chicanery, and that's when you had Jericho come out. And let's face it. If Jericho wasn't nearly as great in his role as he is right now, then maybe we'd be paying more attention to Kevin Owens. But the fact of the matter is, it's Jericho's just on fire right now. I've talked about Owens' reaction, but in the live crowd, anytime Y2J was involved, whether it's just on the screen or just talking or even just running down to the cage and getting in, it was you couldn't look away. Everybody was just going nuts for this guy. And I think that's carried over into other shows too. So this match, you had a couple big spots. You had the big table spot with the power bombs through the two tables, which got a huge, you kind of woke the crowd up a little bit. But I don't think anybody realistically ever expected that there was going to be a major title change at the show.
It's funny, in my opinion, guys, that the guy the fans want to get behind the most to face Kevin Owens is not the designated babyface Roman Reigns, or even the newly created babyface, and I still have my questions on that one, in Seth Rollins, but it's Chris Jericho.
You stupid idiot!
Like, that list thing is one of the most over things on Raw week to week, and I think the moment that we get that Jericho turn, whenever, and I hope they stretch it out, because I think it's something that they can continue to play with for a while. But the moment that happens, he's going to be the most over babyface on that show.
I feel like it has to happen. It's tough because this would mean Owens loses the belt before the Rumble. But if it happens in the Rumble, that's kind of the moment. I think we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, where if he, you know, they come to blows and or they're staring at the last two men, or they're alone at one point and they stare at each other, and then one of them kind of turns on the other. You could do it there, or you could even hold off till after Mania if they can stretch it out. I mean, they're both really good at telling the story. Jericho, man, up the ladder all time, huh? Or, I mean, how many guys have had the run he's had, reinvented himself so many times? It's amazing. Dan, final thoughts on Hell in a Cell. Rusev Reigns. Did you like it live or not? Because that was another match that, you know, the prevailing thought was they didn't need the cell. They could have just done like a street fight. You know, I thought there were parts that were pretty good. Once it got going, it was, they definitely gave them a lot of time.
I mean, the birth of Super Reigns, you know, if you could sustain a accolade with a chain, I mean, what could possibly beat you down the road? That was kind of the thing. Not to sound like Scott here, but we're talking 24-35 for basically your opener. I mean, you had a really cool opener in the pre-show with the cruiserweights that really actually was surprisingly well receptive. You had a good reception rather from the crowd, although it was still a late arriving crowd coming in. But I thought people were really entertained by that opener. But then you get this; it's a really long match. It's not anything we haven't really seen before from these guys. I mean, they've had wild, crazy brawls before. You probably didn't need the cage, but it also didn't need to be that long as well for the United States Championship. I guess if you're, you know, really looking at it, at least it did blow off the feud. This has got to be it. I mean, Rusev right now, we're going to talk about Survivor Series, but Rusev right now isn't interacting with Reigns as far as I can tell. So at least you could say, well, maybe they did have a definitive blow off to the feud. But yeah, the feeling in the arena was, oh, come on. There's no way Reigns is getting up from this. And then when he does win, it's like, okay, cue the booing. And that's what we end up seeing.
Someday they'll sort that out. And we're going to talk more about Reigns in a few minutes. So Hell in a Cell in the books. Let's fast forward now a couple weeks. On the weekend of November 19th and 20th, we have NXT TakeOver Toronto. We have Survivor Series 2016. Again, coming fast, it's, you know, we're not going to talk again until after that show, and that'll be Thanksgiving week. So why don't we go ahead and take a look at the NXT card, and then we'll go through Survivor Series. And then I want to just take a moment after that to just mention really quickly our thoughts heading toward the end of the year. I think, Nate, you know, we'll do more of this as we get towards the end of the year. We'll do some awards for this year and some previewing for 17, but I kind of want to just give a kind of a take on, you know, a couple of the rumors out there from Mania and who we think may be champions toward the end of the year. But we'll do the cards first. So here's the card for NXT. We have the Revival versus Gargano and Ciampa for a 2 out of 3 falls for the NXT tag team titles. We have the Authors of Pain versus TM61 in the finals of the Dusty Rhodes Tag Team Classic. We have Bobby Roode and Ty Dillinger. Asuka versus Mickie James for the NXT Women's title. Mickie James back in the picture. And Shinsuke Nakamura versus Samoa Joe for the NXT Championship rematch from Brooklyn. Anything, Nate, here? Like, what's the main match you're looking forward to? What really stands out? Obviously, the whole card of these takeover shows is always really good, so you kind of have to go to that next step above. But what's really the match that you think will kind of take the cake for the night, and then what's the match you're personally looking forward to the most?
Yeah, I think that, you know, it's hard for NXT to have a bad show, and I think this crowd in Toronto is going to be really hot for it. I think, obviously, the match that I think is going to steal the show and burn down the house is Nakamura and Joe. I think, you know, again, hard for those two guys. You can throw them in a blender, and they could have a good match. But the match I'm personally looking the most forward to is Asuka and Mickie James. You know, obviously, I'm a huge fan of Asuka, and as someone who is a closeted TNA fan, and maybe not so closeted TNA fan.
Closeted? You're like the most well-known TNA fan out there.
You know,
sorry, Nate. Sorry to break it to you.
That's on these airwaves for sure.
You know, I've always been a fan of Mickie James, and I think that my only wish is that this were less of a kind of legend showcase and more of a angle where Mickie James, because her heel character in TNA was so great. And I would have loved
until she got shoved into a path of a train.
I was going to say, until she got run over by a train. But I would have loved to have seen more of that, you know, come through with this thing with Asuka. But I think that's going to be a really good match between the two of them.
I mean, this could lead to more from Mickie, right? We've seen it before where they bring these legends back for a quick showcase, one match, and they have a really good match and they want to stick around. It wouldn't shock me if she hangs around. The funny thing is, I mean, I guess they could maybe use her on SmackDown, but I actually think she's more beneficial on NXT. Like, she's the type of person that should be there. You hear a lot of the you know, complaining, kvetching over guys like Nakamura, and rightfully so, guys like Nakamura still being down there when they could really be benefiting the main roster. But I do think someone like Samoa Joe and Mickie James are well-suited for NXT as gatekeepers, as torchbearers, as, you know, okay, no one around really should be champion, throw the belt back on Joe till we got the next guy. You know, let Mickie kind of hold the fort down in the women's division down there and help train the younger female wrestlers. So I think it could be a good role for her to kind of be the face of the women's division. I mean, Asuka's going to be up at some point, probably by Mania. So she could be kind of a steadying force down there. But yeah, I think that'll be really good. I mean, I think the match of the night's going to be the 2 out of 3 falls. That match in Brooklyn was phenomenal between Revival and Gargano and Ciampa. And now they get 2 out of 3. I think they switch the titles here because I think the Revival's heading up sooner than later because I think they're going to come to SmackDown and help fill up that tag division a little bit more. And actually, even Raw could use some help. So I think they end up on one of those shows sooner than later. So I do think we see the title switch here. What do you think, Dan?
to get back to Mickie James, I was a big fan of hers, but usually it had to do with her kissing Trish Stratus. No, I like your point about Mickie James and helping out the NXT roster. That NXT women's roster outside of Asuka is just a bare cabinet. It is just,
well,
you know,
star power, because I do think there's some talent there, like with Peyton Royce, and especially if they bring in Deonna Purrazzo, you know, if there's others that they start to showcase more.
I think with seasoning, Ember Moon's going to be really good. And right. I guess my dark horse would be Nikki Cross. Because anybody right. that's seen Nikki Storm, you know, on the indies, man, she not only can she work, but she's got a great personality. And I think the NXT women in particular need more characters. And I think, you know, once she gets a chance to shine, she'll be great in that role.
I think of it as like a minor league baseball
yep,
team.
I think
and
you're right.
It's like, well, there's a lot of people.
Who's Tim Tebow?
You have guys who are, you're prospects, and then you have just another guys who are just filling out the roster of an organization. But then you have like a veteran guy who is maybe in between or making a comeback, or, you know, Brian Kendrick was in this kind of position
right.
before.
Yeah.
Like he would come in, do a couple matches and make a couple of the smaller guys look pretty good. And next thing you know, they're probably, you know, hey, you know, why don't we call Brian Kendrick and do this cruiserweight thing? Because we have to fill out the tournament and here he is now. But anyway, I'm getting sidetracked. But I think Mickie James is kind of like that veteran player who maybe is having their one last shot, but they have to spend time in developmental. But in the meantime, they're kind of helping out this kind of young, still developing, still trying to work out what kind of role that they're going to play, what kind of character they want to be. And I think that it's a perfect addition. I think that Revival and DIY is going to be, you know, the showstopper, if you ask me, although it probably will be the first match on the thing, just to kind of get us all up and ready and motivated. And it's a great matchup. It was terrific months ago. It'd be fantastic now. It's great to see guys like Ciampa mm-hmm. and Gargano, who we probably saw in gyms a couple of years ago or even last year with Tommaso Ciampa and with us, JT. And now he's here fighting, you know, potentially for, you know, NXT's, you know, big championships on a big night, and everybody's going to be watching. So I get excited for those guys in that regard. I'm actually really looking forward, though, to Bobby Roode and Ty Dillinger. It's one of those things that kind of just sort of crept up. All of a sudden, Bobby Roode's like talking about how glorious it would be, and I need the perfect tag partner. And then because of the arrival of Sanity, he kind of chickens out, runs away, lets Ty Dillinger get murdered. It's just it's definitely one of these things where Roode's really developing that character. Everybody loves it. Ty Dillinger has always been kind of a guilty pleasure for me. I think his entrance is fantastic with the cards and the tens and everything. The fans really eat it up. I just think it'll be one of those really fun matchups. I think Roode will go over, but I just think Ty Dillinger is definitely a diamond in the, you know, not diamond in the rough. It's great on NXT, but just somebody that maybe gets a little overlooked, but is terrific at what he does.
So Nate, the one match we didn't discuss yet, Dusty Rhodes Tag Team Classic Tournament Final. Have you been impressed by Authors of Pain? Because I feel like when they first debuted, fans were a little lukewarm on them. Two bigger guys, you weren't sure, but they can work their asses off. Ellering is a little out to lunch. I mean, he seems a little like, I get why he's probably there, but
right.
I don't know. Like, I think they should put the Authors of Pain over and then have them turn on Ellering and take him out and maybe like bring in a new manager or something to build up their heat even more. I like TM61, but I think you have the heels go over this year. We, you know, the faces went over. Last year was the first one, right? Last year.
Yeah.
And they have the faces win that. So I think maybe you establish it and have a heel team go over this year. And I would like to see the Authors of Pain win, go ahead and turn on Ellering and get him out of there, and then go on to feud with new champions Gargano and Ciampa.
Yeah, I've been a little bit down on this year's tournament. Not that it's been bad, but to me, last year's was better. But I think there's been some good showings. In terms of Authors of Pain, they're not the team that they're not kind of the mold of a team that I would normally like. You know, I'm not into the big hosses, but to me, that they've got a lot of upside. You know, if you're comparing them to someone like the Ascension, I think it's night and day. I think these guys have the goods, or at least the potential to have the goods. And so, yeah, I'd like to see them do something. I'm happy Ellery's getting a paycheck, man, because that man has earned it.
And he's still—I mean, he still looks like he's in 1989, just physically. So it's amazing.
Yeah, still looking good. But yeah, I think eventually, you know, that it's going to come time, and I think that time is getting near for them to kind of splinter off and leave the nest, as it were.
Yeah, I think beating the shit out of him, and then even if maybe he sides with a face team or something, I don't know. Just yeah, I think he's holding them back just a bit. So
oh, so maybe we get Ellering with No Way Jose and Rich Swann
and Rocco. As long as Rocco's there.
Oh man.
All right. So the next night, staying inside the city of Toronto, we do have Survivor Series, of course, is the 30th one. Interesting card. We're harkening back to the old days. Much excitement from Grand Cawthon these days. We got three classic Survivor Series matches, and even better, they all have some stakes tied to them, which is always a good thing. And then we have three singles matches. So a lot to get excited for. So why don't we start at the bottom and work our way up. We'll start with the Cruiserweight title match. It's an interpromotional match. And if the challenger wins, guys, the title is going to head over to SmackDown along with the entire division. And it seems like a self-correction, right, of the idiocy that they put on Raw. Although I have defended the decision at times by saying they have the 3 hours to fill. They could use it. They haven't really used it. Time's up. Move it to SmackDown where they can be better utilized. So Brian Kendrick defends against Kalisto. And the only thing that worries me is the stip seems so obvious. And yep. Everyone's been calling for it to go to SmackDown. Okay. Oh, they're finally doing it. And this is where Kendrick retains. Kalisto, to me, tips it a little bit. Like, I like Kalisto. But of all the guys they brought up and are showcasing, to put him in this spot just makes it feel like he's probably not going to win.
Yeah, even though they did the thing on SmackDown where he got his revenge against Baron Corbin, I'm still not sold on Kalisto. Like, if that's a stock, I'm not buying it. But the stip, like you said, it's so blatant and so obvious that I think they do it because it makes sense. Because, you know, they're going to have that new, what is it, the 205 show?
Yeah.
205, and then, yeah, it just would make sense for them to be a part of SmackDown. Actually, I wouldn't mind if the Cruiserweights were able to be on both shows. But if you're going to make them exclusive to one, it probably should be SmackDown. So just by that process, I guess Kalisto has to win.
I mean, yeah. I mean, it makes all the sense in the world. We just know they don't always make sense. Do the sensical thing.
Yeah, because what do we always say about SmackDown? We always say that they're pretty... You know, they're very top heavy, but there's not a lot of depth on the roster. So if you add the Cruiserweights, you're at least padding it that way. And maybe you can do a segment or two, you know, segment with the Cruiserweights on SmackDown, even with a shorter time frame. Not to sound like Will, and I keep going back to it's sounding like other people when I say stuff like this, but I just don't have faith in this company and being able to go ahead and do the right thing when it comes to the Cruiserweights. It just seems like, all right, well, we can't, even though we have 5 hours of television a week, you know, we can't find a good enough time for these guys to have a really good showcase. And the thing that confuses me about this match in particular is they kind of shoehorn Kalisto into this because he happens to be on SmackDown, but the feud on Raw, you know, in building up for Kendrick has been the fact that Swan has pinned him now twice. Mm-hmm. And now they're not paying that off. And you would imagine that Kalisto wins and moves all the Cruiserweights to SmackDown and he's the champion. They're going to have Kendrick go in after Kalisto, and it's like, okay, sorry, Rich Swann, we're going to have to wait on, you know what I mean? So there's a lot of kind of, I could see where it could possibly just stay on Raw and they just keep the status quo, but because Kalisto, it just seems like they just sort of rushed this really fast, but, you know, they've rushed things before and ran with it, so, you know, I don't know, we'll see.
I mean, they could do something screwy where Kendrick wins, and then, as we'll get to in a few moments, of course, the stipulation on the Survivor Series matches is that, you know, whoever wins 2 out of 3 gets to pick, is it 3 people to jump ship?
Yeah.
So do they just pick Kendrick and then force the hand to take the Cruiserweights with them? Like, they could do something like that, you know, where kind of swerve it a bit. Because I do think they end up on SmackDown at some point. And maybe Kalisto is the choice. But like you said, I mean, we've seen Kendrick get pinned by Rich Swann. He just won the belt. It'd be surprising for Kalisto to come out of nowhere and win the title. So.
Yeah, right. And now, do they have plans for the fellow who debuted in Scotland, who got the lost big pop and everything? Yes. Are they? Is there any plans for him? Because
Noam Dar,
he's another guy that's feuding with Kendrick as well.
Yeah, I mean, Kendrick seems to be in the position to be battling all these challengers, so it would be surprising if they take the belt off him. I think we're more likely to see something screwy where he wins and then they switch it anyway. That wouldn't shock me. Unless Kalisto wins it and Kendrick just wins it right back. I mean, they could do that too. Mm. All right. We do have our next match here, another interpromotional match for the Intercontinental title, and that is Dolph Ziggler versus Sami Zayn. Now, if they mentioned, I might have missed this, but have they mentioned if Zayn wins, does the belt go to Raw or Zayn comes
back? If Zayn wins, the belt goes to Raw.
Okay. So maybe we get something here where Zayn wins and then SmackDown wins and pulls Zayn over to Raw with the belt. Like that I could see maybe even more than the Cruiserweight thing.
Yeah.
What do you think, Nate?
I definitely think that that'd be the way to do it. But it again, and we'll talk about this more when we get to the main event. Like, I like that there are stakes, but I don't know if they really thought the stakes through.
Right.
At least you know, to this point. But I do think SmackDown makes more sense for Sami Zayn because he's been floundering on Raw ever since the brand split. So, yeah, I think Sami wins the title, and then they get the three picks, and Sami's one of them.
Yeah, I think that'd be smart, you know, because they booked – I mean, not that Stephanie ever gets to look dumb, but they've kind of booked Brian and Shane as, like, the – ever since the draft night. The draft night, they made Foley and Stephanie look smarter. But since then, I feel like Brian and Shane have been kind of the sneakier ones and the wittier ones. So it wouldn't shock me if they do something like that. What do you think, Dan? What do you think of the pairing, and what do you think of that possibility?
I think it's an excuse for them to just have two guys just go out there and put on a great show. And I think Zayn has a lot to basically... won the last match against Owens, you know, on pay-per-view, and then just kind of faded away and, you know, kind of got embarrassed by Braun Strowman. And, you know, he gets talked down to by, like, everybody, by Stephanie. So I think he has a lot to prove. I think he wants to go out there, and he's in the ring with a guy that will sell and will just fly all over the place and who's really upped his game, particularly on the mic. Although the trouble with this feud is he really not utilizing Ziggler talking as much. And now he's going to be fighting Miz right before this pay-per-view again. So we'll see how that plays out. I hope they don't. Even though Miz has been great, I don't want to see Miz and Zayn. It seems like we saw that an awful lot, you know, in the past. I think this is a fresh matchup. I think the fans will kind of be split on this, or maybe they'll be more towards Zayn because he's the fresher, newer name. But Ziggler's also been hot since, you know, with his build up to winning the Intercontinental title. So I think it's just going to be a fun match. I think Ziggler retains, but I think it's a good showcase for Zayn to kind of get him out of this doldrums, this kind of lull that he's been in since. Because now Owens has gone on to win a major title, and Zayn's kind of just been in job squad since. So I think it'll be a fun match for sure.
Well, that's the one thing though, Dan, because you bring up the way that Ziggler has been on this role, this almost career resurgence as of late, and it doesn't make sense if you're looking ahead and plotting this guy's course for the rest of this year and in 2017 to have him drop the belt so soon. Mm. But for the purposes of what they're trying to achieve, it almost feels like they've reverse engineered this thing, JR, where we know where we want to get to, but we didn't really think of the steps leading up to it. So we're going to try to shoehorn everything back into it retroactively. And I think, unfortunately, it's going to not kill Dolph Ziggler, but it's going to stunt his growth a little bit or stunt his momentum.
And I mean, the thing is, too, we talk about the lack of depth on SmackDown and how there's plenty of room for these guys to go over there and thrive. But are they really going to switch all of the cruiserweights and then three more guys? Like, you know, SmackDown's thin, but is it that thin where they can squeeze in like another... you know, eight or nine bodies. I mean, I guess maybe the cruiserweights, if they do what they're doing on Raw, where they have a lot of six-man matches. But, I mean, if you're looking at, you know, we've talked about Cesaro maybe being one. We've talked about Zayn being one and then one other guy or woman. It seems like it's, I don't know, it seems like it may be a lot to move to SmackDown. So it makes me think it's going to be one or the other. But on the flip side, God, are they really going to add three more people? Are they going to take three off of SmackDown and add it to bloated Raw? Like that surprised me as well. So I don't know. It's kind of a weird situation. So let's talk about the first Survivor Series tag match. We have Team Raw is the New Day. We don't know which two. Sheamus, Cesaro, Sheamus, Cesaro, Luke Gallows and Carl Anderson, Enzo and Cass and the Shining Stars versus Heath Slater and Rhino, your Michigan State representative, the Hype Bros, American Alpha, the Usos, and Breezango, who are getting a little bit of a bump as well lately. So looking at the three matches, of course, it sounds like we're all on the same page where we think SmackDown will likely win. Is this one of the ones they win, or is this one of the only Raw win? What do you think, Dan?
I have a feeling that Raw's going to win this one. I think they have the bigger names. I think they have a lot of different storylines going on throughout the match. You kind of have to look at it this way. Each team has kind of like your job team. You know, because every team needs to have a team that gets eliminated first. And I think the Shining Stars are probably the first to be eliminated on the Raw team, for instance. Although it could have been the Golden Truth. Imagine that. Unless there's some infighting going on, which again, all three matches have had some sort of infighting within the company. So you kind of can't look for that as a clue. You just have a lot of, this could very well be, now that I've talked this out a little bit, this could very well be an opportunity to finally, you know, push up American Alpha. You know, I know this contradicts what I just said about Raw, but maybe if a bunch of teams on Raw eliminate each other or eliminate themselves, then American Alpha, you know, sneaks a pin on somebody. And now all of a sudden it's like, hey, whoa, American Alpha, we've been talking them up, but we've been beating them down. There's been injury angles. There's been, you know, trouble with the Usos. But here they are, the sole for the SmackDown team. There's so many different possibilities you can go with. And of course, Raw has all their kind of, you know, I think Nate, you've talked about this on past shows. They have at least two teams that are mainly participation from the audience participation acts.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, and they're all going to be clashing for the mic time. We've already seen it on Raw with these really bloated long tag team segments. So I would like to see somebody like American Alpha finally get kind of like a little bit of shine, because it seems like they've been always kind of, you know, knocking on the ceiling there. But there's so many different parts going on in this match. It's really hard to call.
Yeah, Nate, I mean, do you think that, well, I mean, do you think Rhino and Slater are going to drop the belt soon with Rhino winning? I mean, does he have to go off to office? Like, when's he going to, you know, when's that happen? I don't think he can probably continue to be active, which, again, is poor Heath Slater. But, you know, I could see something with a revival debut and win the belts from Rhino and Slater and then start their feud with Alpha.
Yeah, I could see that. And I think this, first of all, there's too many damn teams in this match. Let me just get that out of the way. And to Dan's point about the way that this was structured, maybe my issue with Survivor Series as a whole, at least, you know, how they're telling the story now, is each of the big three matches is almost telling the exact same story. You know, this is a group of people that are just thrown together that don't want to work with each other. And it's like, I get it, but I think they could have found another way around it, maybe by having either the women or the even the tag match, maybe have, instead of all these teams, have two babyface teams versus two heel teams, or however they want to do it. But in terms of who's going to win this, SmackDown's got to win two out of three if they're going to get the pick. So I think this is one that they can easily win without anybody really getting hurt. And I think the easy out is for Gallows and Anderson to get eliminated and then get pissed off and come back in and cost Team Raw.
Right. Mm-hmm. And Sheamus and Cesaro implode as well. So
yeah.
All right, let's go to the women. We have Team Raw, Charlotte, Bayley, Nia Jax, Alicia Fox, Sasha Banks versus Team SmackDown, Nikki Bella, Becky Lynch, Alexa Bliss, Carmella, and Naomi with Natalya in their corner and Dana Brooke in Team Raw's corner. I do think this is where Raw obviously gets their one win. They have more of the star power with Charlotte, Bayley, and Sasha. We'll get some infighting, I'm sure, on that side. I think Charlotte ends up being the sole survivor, or maybe I think Nia wins too. So I think Nia and Charlotte sole survive or co-survive and win that for Team Raw. They draw things even with SmackDown. Nate.
Hey, Bayley. Ooh. I want to know. Oh, first of all, shout out to Scotland, man, because that was one of the cooler moments on Raw in a long time, and it was genuine, and I dug that.
You know, we wanted to do that song at the XWA show, Dan, a couple weeks ago with Sully.
Hey, Sully!
Hey, Sully!
Sully!
Oh, you had to be there, Nate. It was quite the night. But go ahead.
But yeah, this is to me the one that Raw wins because it makes the most sense. Again, I think you can protect people in this match on SmackDown that you want to focus on, whether that be Becky or Alexa. And it also is a way to give Bayley a big win and kind of for Charlotte to get a bit of comeuppance by having the quote unquote weak link be the one that wins the match for the team. So it makes the most sense. So hopefully, Petty Ruxpin, AKA Old Man McMahon, doesn't, get his Booker's hat on and changes at the last minute, but that makes the most sense. And, you know, just because it makes sense doesn't mean that it's boring or predictable. It just means that, you know, you told a good story.
Yeah, I'm gonna go with Raw on this one as well. And I think Nia Jax could very well be the sole survivor on this team. I think they're really building her up to be that kind of monster, unbeatable force. We've already seen her beat Bayley on television. Granted, Bayley was working an injury angle, but I think she's a different cat, as it were, up in the big roster as she was down in NXT. I mean, we've seen her lose at NXT to Asuka and Bayley, but I think now they're really going to, you know, put a rocket on her. And I think that Becky and Alexa are going to have some sort of infighting going on. Carmella, you know, Carmella and Nikki have their thing, but that's been going on and on and on. I think Nikki's at a point where she doesn't necessarily have to be the champion all the time. And I think maybe she's learning from John Cena that, hey, maybe you could try to put over a Nia Jax in this match. Maybe she'll be the last one pinned, you know, the last ditch effort, but it falls short type of thing. Or that possibly could go to Naomi as well. Maybe Naomi's like outnumbered 3-1. She eliminates a couple, but then gets taken out by Nia, something like that. That's in this particular match. I'm definitely all for, and I'm not trying to get on to your, get in on your action, Nate. I know you're a big Nia guy. So, but I
really, closet Nia fan, not so much.
Yeah.
I'm all the way out of the closet on that one.
I'm gushing about this, which means she might be like the Warlord and go down first. But I'm just saying that I think that this is an opportunity for Raw to elevate a big star in Nia Jax.
As long as she's going down, Nate's happy. It's I think it's, I don't know, I don't see her being the sole survivor. I think they do the like earthquake in 89, you know, like where they have like the big monster heel survive, but kind of co-survive, you know, with like the lead heel. So it almost gives her the rub being standing there with Charlotte as a 2-1 standing tall. But it wouldn't shock me either way. I think either way, she's not getting eliminated, whether she's the last one standing or with someone else. But I think this is a clear Raw win. And just as much as I think the tag is a clear SmackDown win. And that takes us to our big semi-main event. And that is the Team Raw versus Team SmackDown top single stars. And we have Kevin Owens, Chris Jericho, Roman Reigns, Braun Strowman, and Seth Rollins versus AJ Styles, Dean Ambrose, Bray Wyatt, Randy Orton, and spoilers if you haven't watched yet, take a break, here we go, Shane McMahon with James Ellsworth as the mascot there. Fucking James Ellsworth. So, should be a really good match. A lot of good talent in here. We'll get to see Shane bump for Roman and Braun and everything else. We'll get the Braun Bray showdown that we've all been waiting for. I think AJ Soul survives this one. And I think we get him and, you think we get him and Roman last? Do you think they get Rollins the rub to be the last guy? Either way, I think Styles wins. I think Ellsworth costs Ambrose is my prediction.
Yeah. I think that's the way to go. SmackDown to me is going to win this and end up having that 2-1 advantage. For the big three matches, I think your survivors on SmackDown will probably be AJ and Shane because I don't think they're going to eliminate Shane O'Mac. I'm mad that he's in the match in the first place, but that's neither here nor there. And I think who's going to get pinned is Y2J because I think there's going to be some type of miscommunication between him and Owens, furthering the tension between the two. But still, you know, on Raw on Monday night, they're going to find some way to kind of keep it simmering and they'll still be best friends, even though there's more side eyes than usual being passed between the two.
So you think Jericho's the last man?
Yeah, I think Jericho and Owens. Okay. Owens would have to be eliminated. Yeah, so yeah, Jericho's the last guy, and Owens is the reason why he's pinned.
Okay, and I mean AJ is the biggest star of these 10, so I mean he's gotta be the winner. He's gonna be
how,
the
how crazy is that?
Face that runs the place. What do you think, Dan?
Yeah, I mean, I could definitely see Owens maybe pulling the whole, who was it, Piper and Rick Rude fighting off all the way to the back and both getting counted out type of thing. But the thing is I'm not sure if you can get counted out if you're fighting your own teammate all the way back to the locker room. But that could happen with Rollins. I'm curious to see how they eliminate Braun Strowman because Strowman's a guy that's
he could be the count out guy like Taker 90, you know, where he fights off someone. Maybe like Luke Harper comes out to help Ray and Strowman.
I was just thinking. I don't know how long they're going to go with Randy Orton in the Wyatt family. I always kind of believed even when he kind of joined the can't beat him, join him promo that it was all just setting up for
here.
For Orton to pull out the RKO out of nowhere and be like, "Hi, I was just playing with you this whole time," you know, that sort of thing.
I think he does it here. I think he turns out I'm here and Bray gets eliminated, and then they fight is TLC SmackDown or Raw?
TLC is SmackDown.
Okay, so I think we get that. I think that's their blow off is at TLC.
Yeah, because any time a big name joins the Wyatt family, they leave literally weeks later, as we've noticed. I like the idea of Styles winning, certainly. I could easily see it going the opposite way, too, where maybe Ellsworth does get involved and cost Styles, and then maybe Ambrose gets to win, but I could definitely see it the other way. I'm not married to that idea. I'm just saying the whole, depending upon what they do in the other main event, maybe you want to have like a feel-good moment here and Ambrose and Ellsworth kind of hugging or whatever at the end, whatever. It's the same problem we've been talking about with the other two matches. There's too many big parts. There's too many big names. Like in other Survivor Series, like back in the 90s, you could always point to, well, you know what? Ultimate Warrior is probably going to win this. Or, this is the Hogan match. Hogan's going to win. But, I mean, where do you draw the line? I mean, you could easily see Roman Reigns surviving this match, and then the fans will start booing their asses off. So, but I agree with you guys. SmackDown will win this. Come hook or by crook, Shane McMahon's got to be thrown off of something and break something. SmackDown will have the edge because I agree. I wasn't really sure about that stipulation before, but does it really make sense to take your thin roster and take three names off of it? No, probably not.
No, not unless you're bringing up people from NXT to replace them on SmackDown.
Mm-hmm. Right. No, I think SmackDown has to get the win here. I think it makes the most sense. So there you go. So our main event, Brock Lesnar versus Goldberg. And we talked quite a bit about this on our last show. Two of the last three here, we've talked a lot about it. And Goldberg's been pretty damn good since his return. Everyone's pretty hyped. It seems like this is Goldberg's only match as of now. So that makes you think Brock should probably win because he's around. He hasn't really lost in a long time. He should keep winning until you have someone beat him that should beat him. That said, do they really bring back Goldberg, have him all the fanfare, everything else, and then have him lose? I don't know. I think Goldberg wins this match for better or worse. I think they shrug off the Brock loss and they'll explain it away like they always do. And I do think Goldberg has one more match in him. I don't think this is it. But it also wouldn't shock me if Brock wins and they tell the story that, you know, Goldberg, it was a win for Goldberg because he hung in against Brock and took a shit kicking and, you know, barely passed out or so. Like, they could do that kind of story where then Brock leaves and Goldberg gets a standing ovation even though he lost. Like, if it really is his only match, I think that could be the route they go.
Yeah, I think that's the way they're going to do this with, fantasy warfare come to life, which I experienced last week with Matt Ryan putting up 32 points for me. Shout out to Matty Ice. But I think even though it makes sense in storyline for Goldberg to win, it doesn't make sense with all they've invested in Brock Lesnar for him to lose, you know, for Brock to lose, because while I'm a Goldberg mark, you know, WCW for life, he's only going to be there at most for one more match after this. And so I think the Lesnar loss needs to come to somebody that it can really benefit, much like The Undertaker when Lesnar took the streak. So I think Brock wins, but Goldberg is is shown to be able to stand toe to toe. It's going to be a short match. I don't see it going longer than 10 minutes. And, you know, he gets the, hopefully he gets the applause from this Toronto crowd, which is always a coin flip. But I think this is probably going to be it for Bill Goldberg.
I mean, if you finally get another show, Toronto, don't go screwing it up by being a bunch of assholes. Like, just enjoy the match. I do think Goldberg may go once more at Mania. So it wouldn't shock me if he does lose here and then gets his win to ride off on the sunset at Mania. Like, they could do that too. But you're right. I mean, it's tough to explain a Brock loss here. He's been so dominant. Goldberg hasn't wrestled in 12 years. It's such an easy story for Goldberg just to come up just short. And kind of the Rocky Balboa, you know, like, and, you know, he makes his big comeback, one last fight against a dominant champion, and he just barely loses.
And I'm still holding out hope that Brock loss goes to Samoa Joe whenever he makes it up.
Yeah, keep waiting. all right, Dan, what do you think of this one here? And really quick, Nate, is this main event? Does this main event the show?
Yeah, I think it does. I think it does. Even though the stakes for the Survivor Series match with the main eventers is more important, this is the one that everything's been built around with the ESPN hype and all that.
Okay. Dan?
Yeah, I mean, basically Orton, who we've seen a lot of before, if he can main event with Brock Lesnar on SummerSlam, now we up the ante with someone like Goldberg, who we haven't seen in forever. I'm going to be really maybe a little more cynical than I normally am, guys, on this one, because the fact of the matter is I mean, I'm not like a Dr. G level hate for Brock Lesnar. But I just feel like that they can't help themselves when it comes to Brock Lesnar. They're paying him all this money, so they, you know, they want to showcase him, obviously. But they also aren't necessarily known for their happy endings. I just referenced SummerSlam where, you know, Orton's bleeding from his head, you know, to end the show. I'm so glad I watched this wrestling show for the last 4 hours. We just saw Sasha Banks get killed in Boston to lose her title in a cage. I've referenced other instances, but didn't Rusev beat I'm blanking on the name, but he beat a man in front of his kid on Father's Day for the title.
Titus.
Titus O'Neil, exactly.
Poor Titus. I don't remember the guy's name.
So I don't care how many times someone will throw at me, but you know what? His son's there and his wife's there. They've never seen him as a superhero. Screw that. They're going to rip that cape off. They're going to strangle him with it. I mean, I'm not saying it. I hope it's not a serious SummerSlam level squash where all he does is get suplex over and over and over again until he finally dies. And I do think he will get his couple big moves in. I'm just so fearing the worst that this is going to be just an absolute demolition, destruction, violation by Lesnar over Goldberg. And it sucks because I was a huge Goldberg guy too. But I think we're just going to see that 12 years is a very, very long time. And maybe you wanted to do a tune-up match with somebody else before you stepped in the ring with Brock Lesnar.
And he may have. I mean, you know, he may be doing it. Who knows? But I don't think it's a squash. I don't think Goldberg comes back just to be humiliated by Brock. I mean, I know he's kind of a, you know, he'll do what he has to do, but I can't see him going out there and just getting his shit kicked out of him and blown out in 13 minutes. I think he at least gets some offense in and makes it a bit of a match. You know, we might get Brock beating him up like he usually does for the first 5 or 6 minutes, but I think he does get sustained offense at some point. So, Dan, do you agree that this will be the last match?
I do. I absolutely do.
Okay. All right. Quick roundtable as always. Nate, match of the night.
Match of the night is going to be, let's go Ziggler and Zayn.
All right, Dan.
I'll say the Raw main event with the singles guys.
Okay, I'm going to say the same. Most disappointing or worst match of the night, Nate?
It depends on your expectation level, but I think the tag match is going to be the bathroom break.
Dan?
Yeah, I think there's just going to be so much fluff, particularly with like New Day talking and Enzo and Kaz talking and then, you know, the Sheamus and Cesaro stuff. I think that match is just going to drag.
Okay. And Nate, what do you think as far as, you know, making the show 4 hours, doing the NXT hype, building this up to be one of the big four, does it help revive Survivor Series in your mind? We get the stips, we get the Survivor matches, we've blown the show out, we're trying to make it like SummerSlam and Mania. Is it going to revive the brand? Because Survivor Series has been a dead brand for a while now.
Yeah.
I mean, for a long while it's been, I mean, you could argue since, shit, 02, 03, that has really just been another show. And even before then, I mean, Deadly Games was maybe like the last time it really truly meant something. You had a dead cat bounce there in the early 2000s, but since then it's been kind of forgettable most years, or just kind of blends in with the other shows. Does this do the trick to revive its brand name?
I think it's a step in the right direction. I don't think it's perfect by any stretch because, you know, like I said, I don't like how all three of the Survivor Series matches are so similar. You know, in fact, I think maybe the best Survivor Series style match was the one, and I want to say 2 years ago, with the Authority versus Team Cena.
Yeah. Yep.
Like that one actually had some compelling stakes, and the teams made sense. So I wish, like,
it's not like a stink came out. You're all fucking in the bag for that one.
I mean, that just was the icing on top of the cake.
No, that was a great match.
But if we had like that type of thing instead of these teams that feel so divided, you know, I think maybe it'd be a little bit better. But I do think it's a step in the right direction towards making this feel like one of your big tentpole shows again.
What do you think, Dan? Does this revive the brand that you once loved so much?
Yeah, I agree with Nate. I mean, the matches themselves, it's great to have elimination matches. Although if you have elimination matches that are just sort of thrown together, then you kind of can't tell one from the other as the years go on. I really do miss the old days, though, where you had like the team names and guys were actually fighting for one another. This is like the wild card match from 95. It's like, you have some guys who like each other, but then you have guys who hate each other on the same team. If you're into that sort of thing, that's all what all three matches is going to have, it is, so to speak. In that regard, you're almost kind of combining a SummerSlam with a Survivor Series with a Bragging Rights pay-per-view 2010. Everybody remember Bragging Rights? Because that's basically what it's going to be. I mean, nothing short of them wearing blue and red shirts on their respective teams, and you basically have that show. But you also have like the big appearance of Goldberg. You have a Brock Lesnar appearance, so that in itself kind of makes it seem like a bigger show than what I just saw, Hell in the Cell and No Mercy and some of those other shows. So it's definitely a step above, and we'll see when the matches actually happen whether or not it delivers. But I kind of agree. I'm going in with some skepticism because, again, every match has faces and heels that might turn on each other, and that might be the trope for the entire night.
All right, so kind of harkening back, Dan, to what we used to do on the old Kevin Kelly Show real quick, just a couple of questions. Nate, who is the champion of Raw at the end of the year?
Ooh, at the end of the year, your champion will be Kevin Owens.
Dan?
Seth Rollins.
All right. How about SmackDown, Nate?
SmackDown, AJ Styles.
Dan?
Oh, AJ.
Okay, I agree. I think Owens may lose it before the end of the year. Like, I don't know if they want to run both heel champions into the new year. Like, it wouldn't shock me if he drops it towards the end of the year, but I don't see Owens going to Mania as champ. I'll say that. I do think AJ holds at least till Mania, where he fights Cena in their final match. Cruiserweights, Nate, SmackDown or Raw at the end of the year?
SmackDown.
Dan?
SmackDown.
And finally, Nate, are the GM/commissioners the same on both brands at the end of the year?
Oh, you can't fire Mick Foley around Christmas time.
If you're Vince McMahon, you can.
Well, definitely on SmackDown, they'll be the same. I think Raw, they may be different depending on what comes out of the Survivor Series.
Dan?
No, I think it stays the same. I think they like it the way it is.
All right. And, Dan, to harken back to Kevin Kelly Show, will Hulk Hogan be at WrestleMania next year?
I don't know how many more times I'll be on this show between now and then, but for right now, I'm going to say no.
Nate?
He'll be too busy running the National Physical Fitness Program for President-elect Trump.
I said it. he will be there, I think, at Mania. I said it on the Kevin Kelly Show that this guy will be back within a couple years, a little longer than I thought. But I don't think he's
going
to
be back. He's going to be back.
There's already the rumors. Brooke said to TMZ they're talking. So he's going to be there. He's going to be in Orlando at WrestleMania. That's my prediction. Dan, will Daniel Bryan wrestle at WrestleMania?
Absolutely not.
All right, Nate?
No.
Okay. All right,
No.
All right, why don't we take a quick break? When we come back, the Cowboy will be here. Roger Morissette talking UFC 205 at Madison Square Garden. Still to come later as well, Pete Schermacher from Titans of Wrestling talking power struggle and other New Japan news and notes. We'll be right back. Take a listen to everything on the Place to Be Nation wrestling and pop feeds. And, we'll see you right back. Nation's JT Rizzero here, and I want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaySimulation.com, and we offer them to you across two great feeds. On the PlaySimulation Wrestling feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast with our famous vintage vault pay-per-view reviews. PT Man also covers current-day wrestling with the smash hit Clotheslines and Headlines, our steady veteran main event, and the beloved monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on all pro wrestling super shows. Relive wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse, the always contentious Dangerous Alliance podcast, and Survey Says, a fun look back at the good, bad, and ugly of WCW. On our very popular Place of the Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, NBA Team, Lucha Undead, Geek and Sassy, and a veritable podcast heaven for comic fans with Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both of those feeds on iTunes and rate and leave feedback for us as well. All of these shows plus others available at PlaceTimation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlaceTimation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks via the links on the right-hand side of our site. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island in Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keats' Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceTimation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Start spreading the news. I'm leaving today.
All right, Place Nation, we are back here, episode number 11 of PTBN Clotheslines and Headlines. We've talked a little bit of Trumpomania, we've talked some WWE, and it's now time to switch topics and switch sports, heading over to within still the combat sports realm, but we're heading to the world of mixed martial arts, and that means the arrival of only one man, the very politically hungover cowboy, Roger Morissette. How are you, sir?
Hanging in there. Didn't get a lot of sleep last night watching... Watching the history being made.
Yes. History being made. We're going to revisit WrestleMania 5 all over again. but history will be made in a different way this Saturday night. We'll be in the house at Buffalo Wild Wings. McGinn, me, you, maybe a few others. And we'll be checking out this big card, and that is UFC number 205 from Madison Square Garden, the debut in New York City. And I'm going to turn things over to you, Cowboy. Why don't you run through the card, let us know your picks, your thoughts, what's going to be the fight of the night, whatnot, and then kind of give us your take on the importance of this card, the importance of Madison Square Garden when it comes to UFC, and then I think Nate's got a couple questions as well. So,
yeah, no, absolutely. So, you know, it's really – New York is really like the last domino, right, the last domino to fall for UFC. They've been sort of in the Stone Age. I mean, I remember watching UFC 1, UFC 2 when it was only legal in Colorado and not in the other 49 states. And now it's been for a while.
Sounds like something else, right? Only legal in Colorado, now expanding. Go ahead.
Yes, absolutely. They're trendsetters there in the Rockies. But yet, I mean, it's obviously a huge market, a lot of fight fans in New York, and they've had that antiquated law on the books. And they finally have decided to allow it. So the UFC is really blowing it out with this card. It's a huge, huge card, and as they should. Madison Square Garden's really the mecca of, to your point, combat sports, boxing. Best boxing matches of all time have been at Madison Square Garden. And the UFC is making a kind of a big triumphant bang into New York for MMA with UFC 205. So it's obviously it's headlined by Conor McGregor against Eddie Alvarez. Conor McGregor somehow still holding his title that he won from Jose Aldo, even though he hasn't fought at that weight now in, I think, 18 months. So he coming off a questionable decision win against Nate Diaz. I thought Diaz eked it out. But either way, very, very, very good fight. He's in rough. Alvarez is real, real good. Alvarez came over from Bellator and has been pretty much done nothing but win in the UFC. He just beat Rafael Dos Anjos for the title, for the lightweight title. Knocked him out in the first round, which not something most people do to Dos Anjos. Dos Anjos had really looked like a killer coming into that fight. Now, Dos Anjos just lost again on Saturday to Tony Ferguson, so maybe that takes a little shine off the victory for Alvarez. But yeah, he beat Anthony Pettis to win the title when nobody really predicted that. Pettis was looking unbeatable. Pettis, not the exact same style as McGregor, but similar kind of guy in that he's, looking to strike with you, not really looking to go down to the mat. I think that's where Alvarez can win the fight. If he's going to win the fight, is clinch work, kind of put, he's a naturally bigger guy, uses wrestling. And not that he can't strike with McGregor. He's a very good striker, too. For McGregor, he needs to use his speed advantage. He didn't carry his power up to 170, which makes sense given how, to 25 pounds higher than what he usually fights at. You would think his power would be more there at 155, but we haven't seen it, so real tough fight to call. I actually like Alvarez. I think he's the more well-rounded fighter. Mm. He's got more paths to victory than McGregor. Nate, I know you're a fight guy. What do you think?
Yeah, this one's interesting to me because, like you said, I think obviously no one's bigger than the sport, but if we were going to say someone is bigger than the sport, it'd be McGregor. And he's been more well-behaved this time around in the lead-up to the fight, at least by Conor McGregor standards. He's not throwing water bottles at people and acting a damn fool. But most of the people I talk to about this fight that are casual MMA fans, they seem to think this is automatic for McGregor. And I'm like, no, man. Alvarez is somebody that when he's on, he can be one of the best in the world. Like, my favorite series of MMA fights to this day still might be the series he had with Michael Chandler in Bellator. Those guys just, brought it every time they stepped into the cage with each other. So I think my heart kind of wants to see McGregor win, even though he's kind of unlikable, but he's the heel you love to hate. But my head says Alvarez is going to find a way to win this fight.
Yeah. And I mean, if Alvarez wins, maybe it'll send McGregor back down to his natural weight class where he is a dominant champion. So, I mean, there could be a silver lining there, even if you're a McGregor fan, but it's going to be a good fight. I mean, Eddie Alvarez is a better fighter than Nate Diaz. There's no question about that. And Nate Diaz obviously beat McGregor once and then went real life and death with him the second time. So you're going to need to see a better McGregor than you did against Nate Diaz, which you might, because it's 15 pounds lighter. But, I mean, Eddie Alvarez is no joke. And, yeah, for casual fans who think it's a walkover, it definitely isn't a walkover.
No, not at all. But maybe the guy that will be the runner-up in this popularity contest at UFC 205 is the hometown boy. Former middleweight champion Chris Weidman, Hofstra's own. Shout out to all the Pride alumnus out there. Marcus Vandenberg, I see you. Roger, what do you make of Weidman's fight with Romero? Do you think that this is a fight that will kind of bring him back and put him back on track for a title shot, or do you think this is a fight that he can lose?
Oh, yeah, I mean, he definitely could lose. I would call it a number one contenders fight for sure. Because Rockhold and, Jacare are also in that mix, but Rockhold just got injured. So whoever wins this fight has a real good shot to fight Bisping next, even though Bisping is, I think he called out Nick Diaz and George St. Pierre. I mean, he you know, he knows. I mean, it's a great story that he won the title and the way he won it. And, you know, I mean, he went life and death with Dan Anderson, who's 45 years old, 46 years old. He knows his time's limited and he's trying to cash in as much as possible. So he's calling out the little guys. I think either one of these guys wipes the floor with him. Romero is a real interesting fighter. If you've ever seen him fight, he's a, you know, super, super athletic, explosive. In the first round, he's the best middleweight in the world, I think. And I don't think there's a big question about that. He's 39 years old. He tends to get tired. He gasses in his fights. He beat Jacare, but then got popped for performance enhancement drugs after that fight. Had a 2-year suspension reduced to 6 months based on he quote unquote proved it to them that it was in a supplement, you know, just like John Jones. Weidman, obviously great fighter, had a real bad night against Rockhold. Really just one bad move. He tried that stupid spinning kick, got not taken down, and then that was that, and his title was gone. So I think I like Weidman in the fight because I think he's resourceful enough and tough enough to survive that first round onslaught and then win rounds 2 and 3. I think good chance he stops Romero in round 3 due to Romero's kind of cardio issues. Like, that's a strength of Weidman's, is that, yeah, that he doesn't really get tired. He can go. He's kind of a, you know, kind of a middleweight Cain Velasquez in that way, very similar fighting style. So very dangerous fight for Weidman early. If he can get through the first round, I think he'll take it.
Yeah, the longer the fight goes, I definitely see the advantage for Weidman. I kind of wish that he were a better finisher, because I think, especially at MSG, you know, the hometown boy, if he had a convincing and, you know, definitive finish to that fight, that would just kind of launch him into, okay, you know, because I think he's been out of the public's consciousness for a while. And I think, you know, a statement win would kind of put him back on the right track. And like you said, get him right in line for a title shot.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think he's got a good shot at it. Nate, I mean, if I had to predict it, I would predict a Weidman ground and pound, because, you know, just takes Romero down in the third round and, you know, after beating on him in the second round and pounds him out. So that's what I think is going to happen. And to your point, from New York, so it should be a nice homecoming for him. And he, out of the public conscience, yes, but very easy for him to get back into the public conscience with, you know, his win against Anderson Silva.
Yeah,
made him, you know, immediate, as you know, he can live off that one for a while. So he'll, and I mean, if he were to get in there with Bisping, I mean, he'd be probably about a 5 or 6 to 1 favorite, and it'd be pretty nice for him to get the belt back.
I agree. And in addition to McGregor, Alvarez, and Weidman, Romero, we've also got a couple of other big time fights on this card. What would you say would be the fight that you're most looking forward to on this thing? Would it be, well, outside of Alvarez and McGregor, would it be Woodley and Thompson, or would it be the women's strawweight fight? I'm not going to even attempt to pronounce those names, because I don't need those problems in my life. But what would be the fight that you were looking forward to most outside of the main event?
Joanna Jancic.
Yes, Joanna. Go, everybody go to Wikipedia right now while you listen to the show and hit the pronunciation on Joanna's name,
because Joanna Nain Jeshik.
It will provide you with hours of delight.
So that is the battle for Poland there. I mean, I'm looking forward to that fight because Joanna is, I mean, she's like pound for pound level dominant, Rousey-esque, yeah, type of women's champion. So, I mean, I don't think there's much doubt about the outcome of that fight. Kowalkiewicz is good.
Honestly, like, if she were American, I would say she'd be more marketable than Rousey just because of the way that she finishes her fights.
Yeah, I mean, she's you know, Muay Thai striker. Supposedly she's added some groundwork that, you know, I think the expectation is she might actually take Kowalkiewicz down in this fight to show off some of that. But I mean, she's a prohibitive favorite. So while I'm looking forward to it, I like the outcome to be in doubt, if you want to say what am I looking forward to most. So that would bring us to Woodley Thompson, or I love Cowboy Cerrone, and he's fighting Kelvin Gastelum, and that's a good fight too. That fight, there's no way that will be boring. They're both, you know, they're going to stand and then trade. But Woodley Thompson's real, real interesting. So Woodley, welterweight champion after knocking out Robbie Lawler in his last fight, and Stephen Wonderboy Thompson has been on a real roll and looks the part of the best welterweight in the world. He just really took apart a very, very good fighter in the Canadian. I'm exhausted, guys. I'm sorry, but it's a it'll come to me.
Stephen Graham?
Not Stephen Graham. No, it's Rory McDonald. Sorry about that. Rory McDonald, very, very good fighter. And Thompson took him apart completely. And he's actually favored over Woodley. So a little similar, Woodley and Romero, a little bit similar, actually. Woodley's also had some cardio issues, big muscular guy, really explosive and huge, huge power. Very, very, very dangerous early. Thompson's more kind of a surgical type of striker. Stay away from you a little bit. Kind of maybe that Machida in his prime kind of mode. But Woodley's got a great wrestler too. So he has, you know, all things being equal, even though Thompson's favorite, I kind of like Woodley in this fight. I think he's got more options. He's bigger. I mean, Thompson basically is going to have to, you know, use that precision striking. Woodley can load up on the right hand, or he can shoot and take the fight to the mat. Yep. The 5-round fight probably favors Thompson a little bit. Like, I think for Woodley to win, he's going to have to either win the first 3 rounds and then hold on, or get him out of there. He's capable, but to me, it's a true toss-up fight.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Woodley on that one as well, just because I think, especially if you can get him in the first or second round, he's got more ways to take Thompson out of there. And then I guess the last fight on the main card would be between Miesha Tate and Raquel Pennington, which is an interesting fight in a division that has no rhyme or reason, no up or down. It feels very much like the Cruiserweight division on Raw. I don't know who the hell's booking this thing. But what do you see from this match, and how far away from a match with the champion Amanda Nunes do you think the winner will be after this fight?
We'll see if Nunes is still the champion. I mean, she's going to fight Rousey. So,
that might be my spoiler right there. I'm letting people know, because I think this is going to be it for Ronda Rousey.
Yeah,
I think win or lose, I think Rousey's done. Just because she's got so many more options. She's like, she doesn't have to fight anymore. But I think, man, it's almost like Mike Tyson. Once that air of invincibility was removed and the fighter themselves got that doubt, and we saw, you know, Ronda and Ellen talking about how she didn't want to live and she was depressed. I don't think we're going to get the same Ronda Rousey that we saw when she steps in there with Nunes.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I think that might be better for Rousey. I mean, I think her loss was really very much a product of just a god-awful game plan built on supreme overconfidence. I mean, she's a judoka, and she's a, you know, great grappler, snapping arms, and just to, you know, she's been beating everybody, so quick to test herself, she decided to stand up with the best female boxer in the world. I mean,
like, somebody's never seen Bloodsport. That's not how you want to fight.
DMZ, basically, I mean, Holm had one path to victory, and Rousey just handed it to her on a silver platter.
Yep.
So I think she's going to beat Nunes. Nunes is another one that is very, very much a fast starter in fades. I think Rousey's going to have learned from the home fight and isn't just going to try to, you know, to trade with the better striker. She's going to lock her up. She's going to take her down. And once Rousey has these girls down, I mean, there's, you know, Miesha Tate's been the only one who you've seen survive on the ground with her. And so,
well, the thing with that is, let's say Rousey wins. I think if she wins, she retires with the belt.
I think she'll fight Cyborg if she wins.
Why would she want those problems?
She's going to lose. But I think the big money, and, I mean, there's just a lot of bad blood there. I think she would go up to 140 to do it. And if she does it at the higher weight, it's a built-in
excuse.
Excuse when she – I mean, I think Cyborg would probably kill her – not kill her, but kick her ass. And but – that's the fight. The UFC's not like boxing. You know, I love boxing, but the UFC's never like boxing. They always make the fights that you want to see. And that's like the glaring fight that we want to see in the women's division. I think Dana White would figure it out. But Rousey's got to win. If she loses to Nunes, there's no point. Back to Miesha Tate and Pennington. I think this is a, you know, Pennington's a good fighter, but Tate seems to win these fights.
You know who Tate reminds me of? Even though she's won the title before, she reminds me of like a female Uriah Faber.
Yeah,
like she's not going to lose sort of these matches that separate the wheat from the chaff, but then she's going to get in those title matches and she's not going to win the title either. So she's good enough to get a title match, but I don't think she's good enough to consistently win those title matches.
So sort of an ultimate gatekeeper.
And, yeah.
I completely agree. And I mean, even her title match win was great, but I think she was fighting a very one-dimensional fighter there. And so I'll take Tate there. And then, I mean, there's a lot of good fights on the undercard too. I mean, Frankie Edgar and Jeremy Stevens is a good fight. Nurmi Khabib.
You should hit the Wikipedia pronunciation button on that one.
But no, I mean, he's a guy who probably deserves a lightweight title shot. He wasted Dos Anjos, got hurt, came back. Dos Anjos was the champion, and they haven't fought. So if he beats Michael Johnson, who's a good fighter, I think Khabib will beat him. But he's right in line for that next lightweight title shot, which could be – yeah, we could – if McGregor wins, I don't know. They said he's going to have to give up one of the belts. I would hope he gives up the lightweight belt and goes back down. But, you know, you never know. And then first fight of the night, Jim Miller and Thiago Alves. A couple of little blasts from the past there. I think that'll be good, too. So if you're into combat sports, come join us over at Buffalo Wild Wings. Just kidding, but really order it. and get after it and enjoy it. This is one of those kind of historic cards where they really load it up from top to bottom. So tune in at right on the first undercard fight, and then order the pay-per-view, and it's going to be a great night of fights.
It's crazy because I think they've had at least two or three cards post UFC 200 that were better than that, and that was supposed to be their biggest show.
Oh, definitely. I mean, that show was cursed with everything that happened, and with, you know, with Jones testing positive, and obviously Lesnar, you know, going in all right and up. But it was just
somebody warned Goldberg.
they're probably on an even playing field there, I guess. So,
if we're doing this on Sunday morning, we're playing Sunday morning quarterback, which I guess would just be playing quarterback. What would you say is our top headline coming out of 205?
Eddie Alvarez beats down Conor McGregor.
Okay.
McGregor said he's got some sort of crazy announcement after the fight too. I don't know what that is, but he said it's going to, you know, shock the world. Dana White said it's out of left field. I don't know. Who knows? But maybe that's the headline. Maybe he's, you know, I don't want to speculate.
Maybe he's challenging Ken Shamrock and Dan Severin to a three-way.
Maybe he's running for president in 2020.
Maybe he wants the winner of Ortiz and Chael Sonnen in Bellator.
Yeah, I don't know what it could be. I mean, if it's something about his personal life, or who the heck knows? But it's
maybe he joined the cruiserweight division. I mean, he's under the limit.
Yeah, there you go.
Maybe he's going to be under the he'll be under the Kalisto mask.
Oh, yeah.
But no, I think that the headline. I think there's a number of really good, evenly matched fights on the card. So I think like four of the five fights that are on the main card are kind of you pick 'em fights, and then the other one is Joanna, who is, you know, just fantastic to watch. So headline's going to be card of the year. That's the headline.
Joanna. All right, Cowboy, go get some sleep. Thank you for joining us. I'll see you. Well, I'll see you at work, but then I'll see you again on a Saturday night at Wild Wings. We'll be there at the Warwick Mall. So, again, yeah, if you're interested, McGinn will be there. Dan, you excited for the show?
Don't let the fact that Dan's there stop you from coming, guys.
True, very true.
I was going to say, are you excited that you're basically popping my UFC cherry on Saturday?
Yes. You know, it's always been a dream of mine, Dan, to pop your cherry. So. You know, I appreciate you allowing that.
I don't know. He is Team V for life. So, all right. Thanks, Raj. We'll see you.
All right, guys.
We're gonna go ahead and take a break. When we come back, Pete Schermacher from Titans of Wrestling will be back with us here. We see her about a month ago, and he'll be talking some New Japan, wrapping up Power Struggle, and maybe talking a little bit of other news and notes. So we'll be back. Take a listen to everything on the Pro Wrestling Only feed. And we'll talk to Pete in a few moments.
In the kitchen like a Simmons whipping pastry, cruising down A Street, off-white Lexus, driving so slow, but BK is from Texas. Me, I'm out that Bed-Stuy, home of that boy Biggie. Now I live on Billboard, and I brought my boys with me. Say what up to Tata, still sipping my Tata.
The PWO PTBN feed has changed its name, now known simply as Pro Wrestling Only. So it should be easier to find and indeed to say. All of your favorite shows are still here, including Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, Titans of Wrestling, Tag Teams Back Again, This Week in Wrestling, and many, many more, including our full archives of tremendous content. So make sure you subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only feed today.
You got the touch. You got the power. Yeah.
We are back on Clotheslines and Headlines, episode 11. Of course, you got JR, the Godfather, Dan, and of course, Roger. In the building, but fellas, it's time to talk about something serious here. You know, one of the big news stories from the past week was a power struggle, and no, I'm not talking about Trump and Clinton. No, I'm not talking about Dixie Carter and Billy Corgan. Pay that man his money. I'm not even talking Cubs Indians. I'm talking, of course, about New Japan Pro Wrestling's sixth annual Power Struggle show, and to come in and shed some light, shed some insight on this, welcome to the program from Titans of Wrestling. Pete Schermacher. Brother Pete, how you doing this week, man?
Doing good, man. How you doing?
I'm doing good, my friend. And, this was a big show. So for maybe some of our listeners out there who are a little behind on their New Japan or have just been busy with whether it's the World Series or the political stuff for the past week or so, can you just kind of give us your first impressions, your first takeaways from the Power Struggle show?
Yeah, I mean, I really thought it was a really good show. It went long. I mean, it was a long show, and that's a trend that they're going with, not just in New Japan, but we see it at in the WWE. Just today I got an email saying that my start time – I have tickets to the Royal Rumble, and my start time has now started 30 minutes earlier than the ticket will say. So I can block off 4 hours for that show now too. But that's a trend that's going, and they want to get so many. It seems like they just want to get more bang for your buck for the fans and stuff. But a 4 hour show, if you're able to go through it in one sitting, that's pretty tedious nowadays. They're not making the shows as special as they once seemed when it was just Mania or something, or the Wrestle Kingdom going that long of a show and stuff.
Mm. Now, what match were you most looking forward to headed into the show? Was it the title match with Naito and Jay Lethal, or was it one of the other matches on the card?
I am a big Kushida mark, and I think he's been like the backbone for New Japan this year. So him and Bushi was what I was really looking forward to. With New Japan losing Nakamura and AJ and a lot of the workhorses early, Kushida's really had a chance to shine as the ace of the New Japan junior title. And I feel like his matches have really delivered all year long. And so I was really looking forward to this because they were kind of building up a real personal rivalry in the Liger Sano-esque way, like back in like 89, where it was getting kind of personal.
Now, in terms of maybe some names that some of our listeners might be familiar with from their time over here stateside, one of the guys that I've been really impressed with this year with the transition that he's made is Sonata, who some folks might remember from his questionable run in TNA with the Revolution. But we saw Sonata on this card pitted up against Tanahashi. What have you made of Sonata this year, and what did you think of that match?
Okay, I enjoyed the match. I gave it 3 3/4 stars. I thought I liked the work that Tanahashi was doing on Sonata's leg, and early on, Sonata's selling it really well. And then Tanahashi just has a great connection to the crowd, so the crowd was really hot for this match. So whatever they were doing, the crowd was buying. One of my problems with Sonata was he did all this great selling of his leg, and Tanahashi was going after it down the stretch. Sonata does like a backflip and totally no-sells the leg. It kind of irked me a little bit because with all the work being done on it, it meant that it was important to Tanahashi. So I felt Sonata should have worked it a little better. And Sonata's a guy I have a weird love-hate relationship with because I really like his work. But then there's like he gives off a mixed vibe, like he dresses like he's a biker badass type of guy, but he does a lot of flips and stuff.
Wrestles like a baby face.
Yeah, he does exactly. So he just doesn't scream heel to me when he's in the match. But now outside and his facials look like he's a mean guy, but in the matches it doesn't resonate with me. But having Tanahashi lead the way, this is definitely one of Sonata's better matches this year.
And I guess some of the other names, what I really liked about Power Struggle was we had a good mix of, you had some American guys, you had some up and coming guys, you had some current stars, but you also had names like, Liger and Tanahashi, Tenzan and Nagata. In terms of those lower card matches where they had more of the nostalgia acts, how did those matches hit you?
Actually, really well. One of them was a 1-1-2-3. I guess it was an 8-man tag, and Liger was in it. Tiger Mask was in it. I mean, Ricochet, who's been on the he's been all over the Indies and Lucha Underground, and Fit Finley's kid David Finley was on one side. Yep. And I thought it was one of the funnest opening. I think it might have been. I think the best opening match I've seen all year round in any type of promotion where the sense where it didn't steal the show, because I feel like an opener is supposed to entertain you. And this had high flying, it had comedy, it had some cool spots, and it only went like maybe about 8 minutes, 7 or 8 minutes, just enough to whet your appetite for the rest of the show. And it was just great. A lot of wrestling promotions to really take heed to that, where we don't need a ladder match or a Hell in the Cell to kick off a show, for example. We just got guys that got her over and the crowd cares about, and you've given them enough time to have a match that that resonated with the crowd and definitely resonated with me at home.
Now, you can't talk New Japan without talking about the Bullet Club. And, Kenny Omega coming off of the G1 was in a match, against Chaos. Did you enjoy that one? And how do you think they've continued to build on Kenny Omega following that big win at the G1?
They're doing a good job with Omega. I don't think he'd been the guy I would have pushed. I would have gone with Kyle O'Reilly because I think he would have been better in the role. But Omega's come up big on the big shows. And here he had another in the 8-man tag, really strong showing. He's over. So we're going to definitely see what we're going to see is at the Dome in January if he's ready to go in the main event with Okada. But here I love this match. I gave it 4 stars. With the Mega, with the Young Bucks and Cole, I like the Young Bucks as a heel group in Japan, but I absolutely hate them as a heel group in Ring of Honor because they get cheered, and there's nothing they can come out with a chainsaw and cut off all the baby faces' heads, and they'd still be cheered in Ring of Honor. So it's just not a good fit in Ring of Honor. But here, I loved them. I totally buy the Bucks here as heels. I loved the the story with Omega waiting for his opportunity on Okada, so it was really good you know, playing up a sneaky heel role. He wasn't – Okada wanted a piece of him right off the bat, but Omega was avoiding him. It was kind of like old school 80s heel territory, 80s heel territory-esque what he was trying to do. I thought Chaos had a really good shine in the match. They made him look really strong. And then we got this really Gato doing this babyface chant. They're pulling on his beard and they're working his beard for a while. They had good heat, but they also were able to work in the comedy spots, and they worked. Sometimes comedy sometimes it should be better left on the cutting room floor, but man, here it really worked. And I really liked how they used the super kick party to set up the heat for the heels. We got some really fun dives here. Gator's face in peril work I thought was great, especially when they were working the beard. And I thought Ospreay, I thought they worked him here perfectly also, getting him over, treating him like an also-ran, which easily could have been done here. And I loved Ospreay's cutoff of Adam Cole's baby chant, and I thought the hot tag to Goto was just fantastic, and overall really strong match. And then they just teased you with Omega and Okada, and their interactions enough where you're really foaming at the mouth for them at the dome. And I really think they're gonna, at times Omega as a wrestler, I think sometimes he makes his instincts are naturally bad, but I think Okada, who I think is a really smart wrestler, I think he's going to rein him in. But when Omega makes the right decisions, he has killer matches. And sometimes he just can veer off, but I think we're going to get serious Omega here at the Dome. Mm. And I think he's going to have a killer match, and I'm really looking forward to it. Especially, it's going to be weird not having Okada and Tanahashi
in
the main event, which is unprecedented almost, because the last 3 years have been Tanahashi and Okada. So this should be – I think change is good, so we'll see.
Before we get to maybe a little mini preview of the Dome, let's go back to the main event, because you brought up ROH, and obviously a big part of this show was Jay Lethal, who is the former ROH world champion and someone who I'm in the tank for. Like, you can't get me to say a bad word about Jay Lethal, and that's why I really enjoyed this match, because I've been a big fan of Naito ever since, you know, his No Limit days. And so I thought this was a interesting pairing. And I thought they had a really good match out there. What did you make of the main event of Power Struggle, Pete?
Wrong position on the card. From a storyline perspective, I thought it actually felt like almost like a throwback to the 80s, because you see Naito working over Lethal's neck to set him up for his finisher. And so everything Naito was doing was making perfectly good sense. I'm not sold on Lethal as a babyface yet. I think he's getting his babyface run right now in Ring of Honor because he had a really strong run as a heel champion, and that pretty much turned him babyface, because now the fans really respect him as a wrestler. And so I'm just not sure if he's transitioning well enough into the babyface role. So when he was like fighting underneath, I wasn't buying it as much. My negative, it seems like I'm really negative on the match. It wasn't a bad match, but it just seemed like out of place on the Dome show. And especially after having to follow that hot Tanahashi match, and it was a match that didn't get a whole lot of reception from the crowd. And I don't think Jay Lethal is over in Japan. Like, he's not even close to over in Japan like he is here in the States. States, I've seen him live plenty of times. The man is over like Grover for the Ring of Honor crowd. So what he's selling, the people in the States are buying, but I don't think the Japanese crowd was really buying into him as a legit contender to Naito.
You know what he kind of felt like, I'm glad you kind of brought up like the 80s and the 90s. It felt like when Sting was over in Japan with Flair.
Yeah,
where you could tell Sting was the guy on the come up, but he just wasn't the star that he would be, you know, to that audience.
Yeah, they just weren't buying him. And you're absolutely right. And they actually – but the match was a good match. I mean, the crowd just didn't suck into it. And, yeah, it was like they were going through – they were telling a good story. And what they were doing was really interesting. But I think on any other card, it would have stood out even more. But this card just had a lot of – I think there was one bad match on the whole entire show.
So overall, what kind of grade, I guess, if we're handing out grades, would you give Power Struggle?
I'd give it a thumbs up. I'd give it an A. I'd give it a 9 out of 10. Is that enough grades?
I think that works. So they got a good approval rating here, is what you're saying, in this political season.
Exactly. It's got to be better than yesterday.
Well, let's look ahead. You know, you mentioned Omega and Okada. Also at Power Struggle, you know, they started planting the seeds for some other matches, in particular Tanahashi and Aido. What are you most interested in or excited for as you look ahead on the new Japan calendar?
Again, I'm interested in seeing the tag tournament. Normally, I have no interest in it. It drags. A lot of the guys just go through the motions, but I'm excited to see War Machine from Ring of Honor there. I'm a big Ray Rowe fan. He works a lot here in Texas, so I see him work a ton of indie shows here, and I've always liked them. And I think they actually suit the New Japan style really well, as in they're going to be a big aggressive team. I think they're going to get over really big here in Ring of Honor, kind of like I feel they'll get over kind of like Michael Elgin did here in New Japan, because they're going to play the big man style. I think it's really interesting that Juice Robinson is teaming up with Tanahashi as his tag partner. I guess mainly because Elgin's still hurt. But Elgin got a huge rub by being Tanahashi's tag partner. I think Juice Robinson, I feel like he's ripe to break out. I don't want to call it a dark match because they showed it, but it was like the pre-match before the actual card started. And the guy's shown tons of charisma. I think he's always, like, he was CJ Parker in NXT, and he was always the guy who they put in there with the up-and-comers. Like, we saw Kevin Owens debut, and he made Owens look like $1 million in his debut, and kind of set the tone for Owens in his whole entire run in the company. But he wanted to break out. He wanted to be a bigger star. He didn't want to just be the setup guy. And I feel he's ripe now to come in, and I think he could be an impact player for a New Japan or wherever he ends up going. If this is just a pit stop for him, but I think he's a guy who's going to get a big rub. For the Dome Show, because I'm a big Kushida guy, I'm looking forward to seeing him and Kamitachi, whatever his proper name is, I can't remember it right now, that he re-debuted at the end of that match and challenged Kushida. So I'm excited about that, because Kamitachi and Dragon Lee were having some of the most state-of-the-art, high-spot-oriented, go-go-go matches in Mexico. When he came over to the States, Kamitachi really didn't tear it down. He had some good showings, but for the most part, I want to say he kind of mailed it in. But I feel now that he's in Japan, I feel like he's really – Kamitachi, I remember him having a really good match with ACH on a Ring of Honor show, but for the most part, he didn't have any blowaway ones. He had a really good one late recently with Dragon Lee again, but that's kind of like his flair to his Steamboat. But I feel he's going to – I think him and Kushida could be a dark horse to steal the show there. But they still have a ways to go on where they're going. But I'm kind of curious and stuff.
Okay. Now, you know, Pete, we couldn't have you on here, man. Bring you all the way out here and have you talk New Japan without bringing up Roppongi Vice, man. What'd you make of him at Power Struggle, and what do you think lies ahead for Beretta and Romero?
Yeah, I thought they were going to be breaking up, and they seemed like they got on the right page. They had the best theme in wrestling. I loved who they faced in the ACH Ishimori team. I really thought these guys were going to steal the show and have a killer match, but it just went too long for me. I thought it was a good bout, and I thought it went good. It was good back and forth action. I thought. Of all the guys here, I think Trent Beretta is my least favorite of the four wrestlers, but I thought he was the glue to this match, because he was selling his back, and everything was going towards his back injury, and then would set up transitions and stuff, and so everything, he was kind of like the straw that stirred the drink of this match, but still, it just didn't resonate with me. I gave it 2 and 3/4 stars, but I really thought... I thought the match kind of lacked a little structure here and there, but I thought Beretta was really good at selling the back and making trying to set up a story in the match, because it didn't seem like the other guys were all on the same page, and maybe because they had a lot going on, like the teasing of the problem with Beretta and Rocky Romero, and then ACH and Ishimori as the Noah team. you know, as the outsider. So there was, you know, they're trying to get over with the audience. So I just think there was a lot going on there, and it just didn't hit a home run like I really thought on paper. I thought they were going to.
I think, you know, when you talk about Trent Beretta, to me, he's, you know, what the old timers would have called a good hand. Like, he's never going to be your top guy, but, you know, whether you talk about him in the WWE or his brief stint in TNA or even in New Japan, like, I think he's a guy that you could put in there and, like you said, be that glue and be that steadying force in a match.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, he's been able to do a lot of stuff. He can do, like, his forte really on the indies, his calling card has been comedy. But, I mean, he's able to do these. I mean, they're not asking him to do a ton of comedy in New Japan, but he's able to have good junior weight. I mean, he doesn't even look like a junior, but he's able to go with the juniors. And then he's big enough where he's able to work with heavyweights. Yeah, so he's a guy who you could easily move up and down the card depending on where you want to put him and where you need him and stuff.
And like you said, they got the best theme song outside of Bobby Roode and Glorious.
Okay, I'll grant you Bobby Roode and Glorious. But you can actually hum the Roppongi Vice and actually whistle and sing it to you. But I guess you can do that with Glorious too. But people might look at you weirder.
Well, is there anything, whether it's New Japan or not, over in Japan that has really got you excited on the horizon, Pete, in terms of maybe a performer or a card that's coming up down the road?
Well, it's definitely the Dome Show in the New Japan. And New Japan is really my bread and butter when it comes to the Japan promotions. All Japan has really been having they're doing their Noah tournament right now, and I'm enjoying pieces of that. But I'm really excited because I feel like New Japan, at the beginning of the year, they just seem like a super stale company. Mm. And within a year, they were able to develop new stars like Kenny Omega, Michael Elgin got elevated, Naito. And they just were able to quickly, after losing Styles and Nakamura, where a lot of companies would have just folded, they've come up strong and they've pushed the guys, got them over, and then really make it interesting. And I'm really interested in seeing what they're going to do with the Dome. I'm actually might be more interested on how many people are going to buy. Well, it's one thing for me here in America, I spend my money on New Japan World, but I'm not going to be buying tickets to anything in Japan because I'm not going to fly over there.
Right.
But I'm curious on the Japanese market, how well they're going to sell, the Dome is going to sell. I'm more curious on that on a business standpoint, do they buy these guys as main eventers or do they not? I think that's going to be the big thing. And this is going to be a big test for Kenny Omega on where he goes forward and stuff like that. And then, you know, also I'm a little, you know, I know the Young Bucks contracts are coming up in January or at the end of December. A bunch of the Ring of Honor ones are. And since they use so much Ring of Honor talent, I'm kind of curious on how going forward next year, where they're going to be going on in that aspect. Like, will the Young Bucks leave? Will Jay Lethal, will they not have Lethal or Adam Cole or Kyle O'Reilly or Bobby Fish? I know all those guys' contracts are coming up. Ray Rowe. Will New Japan be able to use those talents, or will they got the Ring of Honor going to have to rebuild, and then is New Japan have to going to go? And because these guys help flush out their cards on these super cards, and I'm kind of curious on where they're going to go there next year. But right now, in the moment, I'm pretty impressed with how they're able to rebuild their company so quickly after a big raid like that.
Real quick, Pete, you know, earlier in the show, JR had us doing a little bit of a prediction looking forward. In terms of that comings and goings, if you were to, you know, go to the casino, and this would have to be a very specific casino to have a book open on who's going to come and show up in New Japan, who's the name of somebody you think might be entering New Japan next year, and who is a name that you think might be departing maybe for greener pastures?
I think we're going to see Cody Rhodes make a New Japan tour.
Now, will it be Cody or will it be Cody and Brandy Rhodes?
I think it'll be both. I know the New Japan likes – but you know what? Cody really hasn't used his wife as a sex pot like Mike Bennett used Maria.
No.
The Japanese cameramen loved Maria, but I think they will definitely bring in Brandy with them as a second, but it won't be like you know, dressing like Maria. But I definitely see Cody going in. And the guy I think going to be leaving, I think it's going to be Kyle O'Reilly. I really have a feeling with him bulking up. Either he's bulking up for a New Japan heavyweight run, or I think he's bulking up because he's going to NXT when his contract runs out.
We have made history here tonight. The first usage of the word sex bot on clotheslines and headlines. I like
it. Hey, there we go.
All right, guys. Pete, thank you so much, as
didn't,
always.
Didn't they pass the referendum last night to make sex pot legal?
Yes, in Massachusetts only. Pete, thank you so much. Mind dump of New Japan knowledge for everyone out there who wants to get into New Japan Pro Wrestling or just wants to hear more about it. Pete is the man. You can hear him every week. We mentioned Titans of Wrestling, but of course he is also one of the co-hosts of This Week in Wrestling. You can hear each and every weekend here as well with our buddy Timothy and Johnny Sorrow. Anything else you want to plug, Pete?
Well, actually, we're breaking This Week in Wrestling into three separate parts now.
Oh, okay.
So it'll be we're releasing them as separate episodes, so it might be easier to follow instead of like the long 4-hour shows and stuff like that. Yeah, so we're breaking them up into three episodes, one for NWA On Demand, which Johnny and I will go over all the releases that NWA On Demand released that week, and then Timothy and I are going to do international and indie talk. We just did an interview with this will be coming out in the next few days. We just did an interview with Al Lanart from new promoter of Wrestle Circus, which is kind of because they're going with the AAW indie route, which is going to be like a super indie here, hopefully in Austin, Texas. And they had a really great first show. I'm going in their second show also, and so we had a really good interview with him. So that'll be a part of next week's episode or Friday's episode. And then Johnny and I will be going over all stuff WWE centric.
There you go. Awesome. So be sure to check all of that out. Of course, you could have heard Pete as well if you listened to our Halloween episode of Place to Be podcast, the trivia tournament.
Yeah, that Chad, he hosed me. Hosed me. What a crooked judge.
The highlight was you calling out Will for moving out of Texas, though. That was the best part. So. And speaking of, as always, we'll see you at WrestleMania 2, but we'll talk to you many times before then because you are now in the inner circle of clotheslines and headlines, so we'll be sure to have you back definitely in advance of the Tokyo Dome show, if not before, as well. So, Pete, thank you for joining. We want to thank Roger Morissette as well. Be sure to check out UFC 205. Dan McGinn, any final words?
Well, we're still standing, and the show's still going on, so I couldn't have killed this one just yet, guys, so... You're welcome.
We've survived Trump and we've survived McGinn, so we're doing okay. Nate, anything you got left to talk about?
Appreciate everybody listening, as you should every week. And again, if you're into politics, you can check out the Review America coming out sometime here in the future. And if you're not and you want something mindless to kind of take your mind off it, check out my Luke Cage podcast, Always Forward. I've already gotten glowing reviews, extraordinary reviews, if you will, from Steve Willey. So maybe that's what he's doing this week.
Yes, be sure to check that out. And have you begun prepping for Review America 2020 yet, Nate? Is that just going to roll right into that one for the next 4 years?
I mean, that's going to be a good one, man. Trump versus Yeezy? Oh, I can't wait.
All right, we're out. Everyone, enjoy everything going on Survivor Series. We'll be back before Thanksgiving, so we'll wish you a happy Thanksgiving then. Before Roger and Pete and Dan and Nate and Steve Willey, too. I'm JT. We're out. Talk to you in a couple weeks. Everyone, take care. Slash and burn, return, listen to yourself churn. Locking in, uniform and book burning, blood running, every motive escalate, automotive centering. Light a candle, light a motor, step down, watching heel crush, crush, uh-oh, this means no beer. Cavalier, renegade, steer clear, a tournament of lies. Offer me solutions, offer me alternatives, and I decline. It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world. It's the end of the world as we know it.
Lester Bangs, birthday party, cheesecake, jelly bean, boom, you symbiotic patriotic slam button nap. Right?
Right.
It's the It's the end of the world as we know it.